Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, so we've got everybody here. Tim's here, Brooks here, Chris is here, Purnell's here. How's everyone's doing?
Well, Solid Snake isn't here, so I guess everyone isn't here.
Shut up. Just... I'm going to hang up on you.
Can you hang up on one person? We need to learn that move.
Yes, I can, actually.
Yeah, you just kick from the call.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought Super Smash Brothers there, but I'll take it. Everybody's here.
How's everyone doing?
Good.
I say very.
Tim sounds very involved with something.
Yeah, it's writing down my notes for my fucking review here in 20 minutes.
Oh, hell yeah.
See, that's why Tim takes notes.
I just, in my mind, they go better when I write things down than when I try to whip them off the cuff.
Yeah.
So
for me, that's definitely true. I didn't know we had a fellow note taker here.
Yeah, I'm a cuff whipper, and the problem is I genuinely don't know what to make of that, because I'm like, it's easier for me, but I get no critiques. So I'm like, I'm gonna take it. Everything's fine. I don't like writing. I like rambling things. And if everyone
you like rambling, Purnell?
Oh,
what?
Oh, hush.
What? What are these revelations coming out today?
It's just unedited. Yeah,
all these secrets are just coming out.
Secret.
So many secrets. All these unique secrets.
Wow, somebody said it. All right.
That's crack right.
Yes, got him.
I took my drink.
Off to a good start.
Unique. Okay,
Pee Wee. Y'all ever have Moobot whisper to you? Like, sometimes somebody says unique, and then Moobot will just send me a private whisper and be like, hey, everybody, take a drink. I'm like, you're freaking me out, man.
That would be amazing if I could figure that out.
So good.
But I can't even figure out Discord, so I don't think commands are ever going to happen.
I know that feeling. I'm terrible with Discord. I have a problem where, like, I'll do like a video chat, and it constantly disconnects me because even though I'm talking on the video, I guess I still have to move the mouse or something. Yet I've also found nothing that lets you turn off, you know, like, I guess sensory or whatever crap is checking for. So Discord's rough, but I'm old, so I'll take it. It's my excuse.
I'm old too.
You're not that old. I'm older than you, aren't I?
I don't know.
Dun, dun, dun. Secrets. How old are you?
41.
We're not doing this. The lady is calling it now. Now I think everybody knows how old I am. I enjoy that. I think I'm the baby of this group, but I'm like 4 years older than like the average age of another one of my friend groups. So like it's spreading it out.
Yeah, same.
The baby of the group. I can take it.
Certainly the crybaby of the group too. So
none of us have heard you cry.
I have to evict my dog from this room.
You could totally dodge that.
At all. I think I dodged whatever that was by not hearing it. So I'm going to go with that. Everybody was talking at once.
Everybody talk to Tim while he's dealing with his dog.
Tim, I saw your son.
Tim disappeared. He's gone forever.
Tim, come back. You cannot.
Holy shit.
Yes, you can pet the dog in the SML podcast.
My dog just committed a war crime in this room. Jesus, holy.
It's how you know the dog loves you.
Did you get crop dusted by your dog?
That would... dusting is not really... I need a stronger term for it. Oh, my God. And the window's... Okay, I'm not getting... It'll go away. Just in this room, it'll disperse.
Who's a stinky boy?
It'll be fine.
Boy?
You crack a window, but then you realize it's Buffalo and it's like 4 degrees out.
Actually, it was over 60 today. And
really?
It didn't smell like Cheerios.
Apple cinnamon
Cheerios. Actually, it didn't smell like cereal at all today.
Does it normally smell like cereal in Buffalo?
It is not uncommon for it to smell like Cheerios or Lucky Charms because there's a General Mills factory downtown.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Cool. And you could smell it all over the place. Like when I lived in North Buffalo, I could smell it. Now I live like east of downtown, like outside of the city limits technically. And yeah, I can still smell it. And
cool.
I think you can sometimes smell all the way out. Do I smell it when I'm at work? Because I work out in the suburbs. I don't know. Sometimes I smell like dog food out there. And then sometimes I just smell like a landfill.
Yeah, we had a dog food factory in our area. And when you drove by, there was a 50-50 chance of it smelling like, you know, warm beef and something delicious, or smelling like absolute death.
Yeah, there was a I don't remember the name of the town because we called it Stinky Town. It's somewhere in northern PA that we would there's a Domtar factory there, whatever. I think they make paper products, and it smelled terrible. We passed through it on our way down to Magfest every year. We just called it Stinky Town, like roll up your windows, it's Stinky Town.
Oh geez.
And then you'd move back. Yeah, you'd get past it. Yeah, and it looked like you know, it was a village in service of a factory, one of those deals. Just like everybody there worked at the factory. And
Yeah.
Pennsylvania has some shitty towns.
It's a shitty state.
It is a shitty state.
I drove through an Amityville, and I thought it was the actual Amityville, and then learned it actually was not the actual Amityville. It was some cheap knockoff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but have you ever been to Centralia?
I wanted to, but now there's no point. I heard you can't get into the town, and they got rid of the cool highway graffiti. I pretty much took a good thing and ruined it.
Yes, a burning fire underneath a town is a good thing.
It is. No, but at the point where like 10 people still live there, it was this cool like legend. You could sneak into the town and like potentially fall to hell. It was great. And now it's just a roadblock in a graffiti-free highway zone. Just like every other freaking highway in America. Graffiti-free while on the ground. Don't answer that. Don't follow that up with a statement. Point is, I missed Centralia. I missed the fact that I had a chance to go to it, and it's while it was still quote-unquote pure, and now it's been ruined.
Tim, didn't you make it to Centralia before?
No, I did not.
I thought you did.
No, Rory did. As it is, people continue to confuse us.
I just thought like your whole group went down there for something.
No, I don't recall what the event was when like some people finally went there, but I was not there.
Did your friends sneak into the actual town proper? They just like go up to the highway.
They were just on the highway. Oh. Yeah. Apparently 5 people still live there as of 2017. So maybe that changed in the last 5 years, but
I wouldn't be shocked if it changed. It's like, no one cares about the town anymore. Sorry,
there was a census
they got
in 2020.
Rid of the graffiti highway.
In 2020, there was 5 people there. The makeup of the borough was 80% white and 20% Asian. One resident was under the age of 18.
Wow.
Math becomes easy when there's only 5 people.
Yep.
Yeah, imagine one kid still living in Centralia. That has to suck.
That must have been an interest. I wonder if he was homeschooled.
The bus comes to pick him up. Why won't your parents get you out of here? I'm not even supposed to be driving through here. I know. I don't know how your bus got on this road. It's blocked off. That's a good point. How am I on this island? Silent Hill town. But
I'll say, though, it's not that impressive of a town. Everyone's
not.
It's this super smoky town. There's fires underneath the ground. And it's this. No, it's just like you could see a hole with smoke coming out. And that's about it.
But people are claiming that you could be walking and the ground could just give way underneath you.
That could happen anywhere.
No, it can't. Don't even try it. Okay. I'm just going to work.
How many times do you see sinkholes just pop up in the middle of a city?
How rare is that? I've seen it happen once. And it was
a highway
bridge.
Sinkhole into Google. I'm sure you'll find a bunch.
Yeah, but then Googling it doesn't help. I mean, the internet has access.
Fine,
to
then bing it.
No, if you Google something, Google contains every occurrence that has ever happened anywhere at any time. I'm like, sinkholes appearing. Oh, shit. 200 sinkholes around the world in the last couple of years. That's a lot.
Actually, you know where I keep? I've run into some sinkholes recently in Elden Ring.
Do tell.
That is really cool.
Seamless segue. Thank you.
Sometimes you're walking. And then the ground gives out under you, and then you might fall and be someplace.
Speaking
like,
of Elden
very
Ring,
bad.
I did beat my first shard bear last night, which I'm proud
Congratulations.
Of.
Congratulations.
I saw that. You're level 45, right? 45 hours?
Yeah, which is kind of sad because like I'm going to make a magician build. And then it turns out I fight this boss and like, magic sucks. I'm going to just stab with claws until he dies. even though I wasn't built for him. But apparently bleed damage is so strong that not being specced for attack didn't matter. I just
bleed can be pretty good.
I am officially a fan. But the downside is magic still seems to suck. I just got glint blade phalanx and a couple other spells. Still all shitty. Pebbles and arcs for days.
I guess I summoned in a sorcerer for a boss battle a couple days ago, and he freaking sorcery Kamehameha'd the boss into oblivion. And I am pretty high level and I hit things pretty hard, and I was having trouble with this boss, and he just walked in the room and just, and I, like, watching that health bar go down, I was just like, holy shit. He's got something is working for this guy.
Yeah, he's just hearing me tell me the ways then, because right now I'm like, all right, here's a spell. Piddly damage. What the hell am I doing wrong? Piddly damage. And no, I'm not going to fire arrows at a bird to make him run off a cliff. A friend did show me that shit this weekend. And now I know why all my friends are like, you're just too slow for now. I'm already level 150 and I've almost beaten the game. Yeah, because they're shooting an arrow at a fucking bird. That's not fun for me. I mean, I know no qualms for people that want to do it, but don't taunt me for not freaking skank maxing my guy out because I don't want to fire arrows.
You got to find the Night Comet spell. Spell, not smell. The Night Comet smell is in this room, but the spell is useful.
Oh, Night Comet, you're such a stinker. So,
what does the spell do?
I believe that is the magical Kamehameha attack.
I want to look into that then, yeah, because I need...
If you follow directions I gave you either last week or the week before, you would find your way.
Was that...
you expect us to remember things. That's hilarious.
Just Purnell.
Was it expected to go to Kaylet? I forget.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I'm at Kaylet right now after beating the guy. So I should leave because I need to activate that damn great rune. But otherwise... Yeah,
don't forget to do that because I definitely forgot to do that for a very long time.
Yeah, my friend was like, you really want to do that because it has a good effect that will benefit you and your low vigor ass. So I was like, done. So I need to do it. Because, like, I'm running around with 20 vigor, I die in 2 hits, which is why I'm amazed I was even able to survive that in, like, bounce boss. Because I did do the thing where I summoned the game's helper, and I threw a freaking jellyfish on the board. And I just ran up to his face. And someone might be saying, well, you use somebody to
fucking
but his attack hit everybody all the fucking time. So it's not like they really even helped me. It was like, well.
You want to know what helped me? Carnage subbing for his 13th month in a row.
I knew you were going to say that.
The tone of that transition. It was biddies or it was a sub.
Hey, we got a fucking out of it. So
yeah.
Hey, I'm going to ask the burning question that is on everyone's minds. Did it happen for Joe and Chris or did it not happen? Elden Ring. How are you guys feeling?
Oh, I just hadn't had time to play it.
I hadn't had time either. I was playing the show all weekend.
Oh, okay, cool.
You're playing the show all weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, like the baseball game?
Yeah.
Yes.
He wasn't Xbox.
Planning the show, per now. He doesn't plan the fucking
show. Yeah, come on. I mean, there's no planning to this shit.
I mean, you had time. You just chose to play a different game. What were you thinking?
I mean,
yeah, I was mostly playing different games because they're in proximity of the office instead of the living room.
Yeah, I played less of Elden Ring in the last week because I had a game to review. So,
oh, not the review games.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, you know, and I played some games with my kid this past weekend.
Yeah.
With your kids?
Yes, with my child. I do this.
You have a child?
Yeah, it had actually been a while. Well, we played the new Mario Kart courses together. But broadly speaking, we haven't really been playing a lot of games together lately. He just hops on the Switch and I play Elden Ring. So this might be like a bad dad thing, but I was like, hey dude, let's play some games this weekend. And like, he's been poking around the Super Nintendo offerings on the Switch you know, running into the brick wall of how difficult games were 25 years ago. So I was like, yeah, but you know, if you want to see Super Metroid, I will play Super Metroid. But he is begging me to play Earthbound for his enjoyment.
Do it.
One of those games is I can beat in like 3-4 hours. And the other one is Earthbound, which I've actually never completed. But
really? Time to change that.
Yeah.
I don't like Earthbound that much. Let's not like mince words here. But I understand why people like it. It's just, it's a flavor of Dragon Quest that I don't care for as much. And I know some people really love.
Did you know that Nintendo uploaded the entire strategy guide online so that you can play along with that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I own the strategy guide.
Nice.
Owned before I sold it for like $80.
The thing I find interesting about that game, though, is that, like you mentioned Dragon Quest, like I played Dragon Quest 1 and 2 back in the day via game rentals, and I didn't really get into them so much. More like I actually told myself, like, I wasn't a big fan of RPGs where you couldn't see your party members. So I was expecting to dislike Earthbound because of that. But it was the quirky aspects of it that made me want to give it a try. And it clicked. Like, it genuinely clicked.
No, it makes it work. It's the same thing with Yakuza Like a Dragon. Like, that game makes Dragon Quest work for some people. And I didn't like it that much. But Earthbound makes Dragon Quest click for some people. Dragon Quest didn't really, I mean, my love didn't completely blossom until Dragon Quest VIII, and then I went back and played like almost the entire series. And
yeah, I'm up to VIII now. I've played all of them up to that.
Dragon Quest VIII is so damn good.
Yeah, I haven't finished like 2, 3, and 7. Oh, actually 6. I didn't end up playing a lot of, but
not a lot of people have finished 7.
Seven's a big fucking game.
Yeah, it's easily twice to three times as long as all the rest of them.
Oh, God.
Far in 7 back in the time I did play it. Makes me that much sadder I didn't finish it, because you don't just go back to that game and just like, where did I leave off? I'm just going to resume this. So,
yeah, Dragon Quest 7, you always think that you're farther than you are. It's weird because it's kind of like, you know, you've been playing for like 60 hours and you're like, all right, great, it's time to land this thing. And then you realize, oh, wait, I've still got like, all these pedestals.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Dragon Quest VII has one of the biggest walls in the franchise as far as like it'll make you or break you for the most part, because when you unlock the jobs, you have to beat that one boss who you can't really build a strategy around him because you have no job system yet, and he's a real pain in the ass. Like, you have to really beat him in a fairly specific manner unless you're a grinder type, and I've heard more than a few people quit the game just because they can't beat him and they don't want to deal with figuring him out.
But once you beat,
everything opens up.
There's a boss like that in almost every Dragon Quest, honestly. Dragon Quest 4 has one, and I know 6 has one, because the one in 6 really pissed me off. I almost quit. But, Quest tends to have, like, a wall boss at some point.
Oh. Now you got me wondering who the one would be in 4, because I have played through 4, but, oh, wait, I think I know what you're talking about. It was a boss right before you start really getting the characters to meet each other and do stuff with them.
It's one of the early bosses. Let's just say it's the one like pretty much right before you get the ship.
I can't remember.
I think I am remembering the same guy then, because I do remember a guy in a castle that pissed me the hell off.
Those fights, if you're invested in them, they tend to be pretty unforgettable, because you're like, how can I beat this?
Son of a bitch. I do like those games a lot. I need to get back at some point. It's been a while since I got into a good Dragon Quest running.
Brooke, so what's your favorite flavor of Dragon Quest?
Wow, I was muted. It is Dragon Quest Builders and Dragon Quest Builders 2.
Nice.
I hate the shit out of Dragon Quest Builders.
I gotta go back to those games.
I loved it. I love Dragon Quest Builders original a little better than 2, even though I really look forward to 2, because it just has all day. But, like, yeah, I'm probably too close to it. I had such a great time in those games.
Awesome.
Hell yeah. That's the one and only time I got to go to Japan. They had Dragon Quest Builders 2 plastered on like all the buildings in Akihabara, because it had just come out in Japan. So like it was just like a parade practically, just all the time.
Awesome.
Mm. Yeah.
I've never played an actual Dragon Quest game besides Builders, actually.
Oh man, Dune 8 or 10.
You know, my friend recommended
11. I didn't mean to say 10. Stop it. I meant 8 or 9.
Yeah. Nine is so fun.
Yes, it is. Especially
very different
back
from the other ones. Or pretty different from the other ones. It has differences.
Gone to Best Buy to trade maps with people was something. That was a moment.
That's something I miss with the 3DS that kind of went away with the Switch, is bringing your console places and trading game data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool, like doing that with like Picross games and just swapping special puzzles and shit like that.
Remember being at Magfest and you would just like have this moment of watching like people just standing in the corner
checking their street passes.
It eventually became too much work because it would load up so fast.
It was so cool. Despite
and Nintendo
being
made that queue where you could have 100 people, and you're like, well, gonna fill that up real quick.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then you're like, hey, here's all these new puzzles I got to unlock. Like, yeah, that won't take fucking long. Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Taking care of business every day. And that's honestly, I was thinking about that before, like, earlier. I was thinking about Xbox 360 was like the prime for like social gaming for me. But so the DS and the 3DS was his own mecca of his
stuff. It was like the same era, you know?
Yeah.
They overlapped.
Like, it's amazing for all the stuff we've got now. Like, I just feel like it all pales in comparison to what we had then.
Yeah. And well, it's like instead of having a more broad community that was like all of just, you know, generally all the people I knew were on Xbox playing Xbox or had DSs and stuff. And now it's like I have my little gamer pocket crew, you know, it's like a little group of people. Then we just, you know, have to talk about what games we're going to play rather than just like, oh, you know, I'm going to sign an Xbox and someone's playing the game I want to play out of the 40 people on my friends list, you know?
Yeah. I do miss that. We used to do Team Fortress Tuesdays where, kid you not, we get like 15 to 20 people to just get together and like party chat or 10 people to get together and party chats and just like do like team battles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
An era that I can never replicate. Like, it will never happen again. And it's like, I acknowledge that sort of shit. It's like, it sucks. Like, it was a pocket in time that can never be brought back.
Yeah.
But I think about it all the time. Like, that's what social gaming was. And I guess some people still get that from games like Fortnite or whatever, but I don't think it's quite the same.
Mm.
So that's me being an ancient
curmudgeon. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah, my back hurts.
Hello.
hello. Who's there? I can't hear you. Lloyd Berry in chat has a good question for all of us. They just recently got a Switch and they need game recommendations.
Oh, shit. Sorry, Lloyd.
All the games made by Nintendo. I mean, most of them. I mean, it's a start. That's, you know, when you have a Switch, it's either you're playing the first party Nintendo games or you want like the indie games portable on the go.
Do you like puzzle games? Because if the answer is yes, by Baba is you. It is a Coke addiction.
Oh, hell yes. Yes.
That game will give you a freaking, make your brain hurt.
I love that freaking game. It's oh, really my great. God.
Right? It's so friggin' good. Like, I've never been so happy to feel so dumb. Like, it's just
same.
It's such a great game. Like, I recommend it to any puzzle fan. Also, Puyo Puyo Tetris. Scourgebringer, if you don't have it on Steam already, it's a really good frenetic platformer. Roguelike, of course, so be that as it may. But it's not an RPG roguelike, it's an action roguelike. The Danganronpa Collection, if you haven't played those yet. I reviewed Circa Infinity on the show. That's a good one to buy. Any of the experienced dungeon crawler RPGs. So you got Undernaut, you got Strangers of Sword City, you got Stranger with Savior of Sapphire Wings.
That one was good, yeah.
Yes. Like all the Nintendo games, like Tim said, pretty much all the first party stuff is like on the point mark. Crap, I can seriously just make this guy a list.
Yeah, honestly, we could probably.
All right, listen, you're just going to have to go back and listen to the last 5 years of the SML podcast.
That's a good starting point, at least.
But yeah,
honestly, Spelunky 2, and everybody's going to tell you to play Breath of the Wild. I was late to that camp, but it didn't disappoint when I did finally get around to it. Although, with recent releases of this year that shall not be named right now, it's hard to get back in there, but it's a phenomenal game for sure. Dragon Quest Builders 2 also on there.
Hell yeah.
I'm excited. It's good.
If you like puzzle games, you should check out the Puzzle Quest Remaster. It's really super good. Flip-On, which is a spiritual successor to Panel Dip-On, which is great. You can also play Panel Dip-On on the SNES thing. Yeah, there's a lot of great puzzle games on there, too.
If you like organizing your room, download Wilmot's Warehouse.
Awesome.
It's a game that I love that I have trouble recommending because, like, what's so good about it? It's like organizing your bedroom.
Pernell, have you played Unpacking?
I have, and it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
How about Moving Out? I haven't played that, but they keep trying to throw that at me.
Moving Out is fun, but only more so with friends because kind of like overcooked. It's like, well, like you and your guy could have a lot of fun with it. It's like overcooked in that regard where the fun comes from like the chaos of like, okay, we got to get this couch out the house, but the door is just throw it out the window. It's like, there's fun stuff like that. It's a good game.
Cool.
Let's see. I could do.
We can go on forever.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, we can. I know you're in here a lot, Lloyd. Like, I will try to make you a short list if you pop in your fave genres. I'd love to think about that for you.
Yeah. I'm gonna say, do you like shmups? Because holy geez, do we have news for you? I'm reviewing three of them today.
It's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Speaking of review, should we get to those? We have a bunch to talk about tonight.
I reckon.
I feel bad. We like. I don't have a good. Like Elden Ring discussion to use the image this week. I don't know.
Well, maybe it'll come up.
You know, I'm trying to write a speech about this shit. I'll have it ready by next week. I try to get Purnell to write it for me. I'm trying to refine this idea, and I wanted to combine Purnell's knowledge of just the whole Souls franchise, and you know, this is my first Souls game, but I'm going back and reading a lot about what's the guy's name, Miyazaki, and like the combat system, and he really reminds me of another creator. But the two games I really want to create, I want to compare that to. Purnell hasn't played, so I'm gonna get something.
In typical Purnell fashion, he does.
I'm gonna request that you present it like a TED Talk.
I
need you to have a one of those really small, like, you know, clip on like microphones and stuff. Have like a nice suit kind of thing.
Okay, all right.
You talking with your hands a lot?
I do that.
So that kind of reminds me, speaking of storied franchises and developers with a huge history of quality games. Chris, guess who I got an email from?
It's Radalika.
I have one guess, which is three names. No, two names and one letter.
You know who it is. You know the man.
We all know the man.
This Resumel podcast.
Now, if it was Joshua Goodpaster, I would leave my seat, but I imagine it's not. It's probably...
Yeah, I think Carnage got it. It says, in celebration of the launch of Ashigaru, the Last Shogun, and as a token of our gratitude to press and influencers around the world, we are offering a game key. Obviously, if you want to do an analysis or review for this unprecedented game, if you have any questions or anything else, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy it. Do you notice what was missing there?
Most of the grammar?
The actual key.
The actual key, perfect.
Yes, there is.
I wonder if he was like.
I thought you were omitting that.
Like, don't send that to them. They hate me.
No, he. They sent an email saying that they had a key and there's no key included. So.
Are you going to write back?
That's perfect for me. I'll take it.
Review as is. You're like, yeah, I can play. This game's unplayable.
Exactly. Brooke already wrote my review for me. There's no key. I mean, this is as good as this could possibly go for me.
The legend continues.
Now, if a key does show up, I'll have to keep it updated. And I know our listeners are on the edges of their seats, just waiting to hear if we will get a key for this game.
Just to make sure I'm right, though, that game is by Gilson B. Pumps, right?
Oh, yeah. You know it by the title.
I was like, it has to be Gilson. There's no one else it could be. He's like, who is it? Who's this guy?
Ashigiri, the
Ashigaru, the Last Shogun.
That's actually really tame compared. Like, it's almost not unpronounceable.
Lloyd, I'm not sitting on the edge of my seat. I'm sitting comfortably.
That is your freedom. You can do that.
Unlike Joe, who's still at only 9.84% for a new office chair from My Fat Ass update.
Yeah.
This is unacceptable. We've grown like 2% in a few months. Come on, people.
No, save your money. Don't waste it on me. Waste it on games instead, like the first game we're going to talk about tonight, which is how about that? First game tonight is CryStar, developed by Furyu Corporation, published by North America. Oh, Lloyd dropping a single bitty. Thank you so much. Bumps it up to 9.84 instead of 8.3.
Yes.
Look at that bit fall
Brooke,
in.
Brooke working the guilt.
Thank you, Brooke. Thank you, Brooke.
Anytime. What kind of old lady would I be if I wasn't just guilting people into doing what I want?
Oh,
All right, let's start this over. First game to talk about tonight is Crystar, developed by Furyu Corporation, published by NIS America, released March 29th on the Switch for $49.99. To atone for her sins, Rey must fight through the purgatory and save her fallen sister. Turn your pain into power by summoning mighty guardians to stand alongside you. And when overwhelmed with grief, draw strength from your tears to grow stronger. By overcoming the enemies around her and the inner conflict within her, only then will Rey release herself from her own suffering. Chris, what's going on in Crystar?
It brings a tear to my eye. Actually, some kind of weird eye thing is bringing a tear to my eye like constantly, so this is a nice refreshing game for me. like my probably allergy ridden eye, this game is very, very into crying right now. This is Crystar, and it is by, I think it's actually Furyu, because it's capital F-U, and then it's capital R-Y-U.
Capital F-U.
Okay. Yeah, capital F-U.
See, I never know, because when I see the company name in the press releases, it's all caps, so I never remember how to say it.
Yeah, I mean, this is just my guess. Yeah. But it's put out by NIS, and NIS, you know, NIS don't miss, as far as I'm concerned.
Ooh, nice.
No matter what the like concept of whatever they're putting out, no matter how weird the game seems, it's like it's always got like just enough polish that I'm like, yeah, I believe in this already. Which is, you know, because even though they're very similar in tone to like your kind of what are they called, Idea Factory, Compile Heart type games, they're usually executed a little bit better, and this is actually no exception there. Shout outs to this game for actually being like a full 3D thing. That's like a conversion, a port, from like PS4 and Steam, and yet actually runs perfectly on the Switch. So I'm going to shout out the performance of this game right quick. Now that we've got that out of the way, let's talk about the crying. So Ray, you start off this game as a laser butterfly, slowly fluttering over, this kind of strange Escher-esque like landscape of floating platforms against a sun that is beaming out swords constantly, and the whole thing is colored like a Lisa Frank thing, so it's basically purgatory by way of Lisa Frank, which I enjoy. Your laser butterfly eventually turns into Rei Hatata, who is a 15-year-old girl, a Catholic schoolgirl in trouble indeed, as her younger sister also appears there. And then suddenly the two are separated, and then reunited, and then the younger sister is presumably murdered, which is terrible.
Yes.
They seem to have fallen victim to some kind of mysterious circumstance, because both girls were just in their home and then suddenly found themselves as laser butterflies in a floating platform, Crayola nightmare. And they were basically, they have run afoul of a princess of revenants, whose name I shall not attempt to remember. but she shows up and acts very bad guy-ish, and then, yeah, your sister gets murdered, and now Rey is overwhelmed with emotion. So the tears start early, and then she finds out that those tears actually contain power that is desired by the demons who run Purgatory, which is the place in which she has found herself. Those demons are also anime ladies. There's a theme here. It's basically, yeah, every person in this game is anime or a like kind of a, you know, one of those porcelain dolls that, you know, with the round head and like the big eyes and stuff and like the creepy black and white kind of clothing and such. It's a style. But so they basically tell her, well, we can bring your sister back. She can go through a revival, but first we need Idia, which is spelled idea. And but the Idia is like produced by murdering ghosts, which live in purgatory. These ghosts can take many forms, mostly like floaty things with blankets over them and dragons and stuff. So Rey is charged with the task of murdering all kinds of ghosts, and which we find out are, you know, we find out there's more to them than meets the eye. But when she does, then she's able to collect this idea. You may even, because they seem to be produced from her tears, you may even call her an idea factory.
Sorry, I wanted an air horn there.
Thank you. I appreciate the air horn. And yeah, that's basically you go into different levels and beat up ghosts and cry and repeat. So where does crying like really fit in here? It's not just that crying produces idea. No. So when you are fighting these ghosts, occasionally you will fight a revenant, which is, you know, specters and revenants. And revenants are the more powerful version. They contain the suffering, the burdens, the emotional burdens of, let's see, what's the actual word they use? Never mind. It's burdens, basically. Emotional bad times. And those get absorbed into Rey and lower her stats temporarily while she's in the level. So the more you fight, actually, the slightly weaker you become.
Hmm.
And so the thing is, though, at the end of the level, you get returned to Rey's room where she gets to basically deal with everything. Literally, the levels are called ordeals. And then if you choose the organize option, then she will sit in her room and cry in a cutscene until all of those burdens then become sentiments. And sentiments are the materials that you use to actually strengthen your sword and your armor that you get to use in the levels.
Hmm.
So it's using crying to literally make your weapons and armor stronger. And, you know, it's like the metaphors are quite heavy-handed here. Here's another thing, is that she has a special guardian, which is just this giant-ass knight guy with a sword. You know, it looks like he could maybe be an Elden Ring. and she can summon him, you know, to help out with the hard battles, because, you know, his big sword basically doubles her damage and then plus some. And it's really, really handy for getting like through boss fights and stuff like that. By the way, the actual gameplay is running around and hitting things with a sword. Like, that's it. it's literally a brawler by way of kind of a quasi RPG. Think like El Shaddai or something. Like, it's kind of like that. Like, you're just running from, you know, room to room where you eventually get cut off. They send in a wave of enemies, you defeat them, and then move on and, you know, try to uncover all the map till you find the boss. That's as much thought as anybody put into the actual combat of this game. So I'm talking about the crying. So in order to summon a big bad night guy, she actually has to fill up a tier meter that is on the lower left of the screen. Because basically as you destroy enemies, that tier meter slowly fills up. And then, you know, when it fills up all the way, then she can, you know, summon the dude, go completely ham for a while, and then, you know, it drains out, and then, you know, it fills up again. Here's the thing. At any point in the game, when you're in the action sequence, you can hold down the L button and just sit there and cry and fill up that tier gauge if you want. It drains out your, like, special ability points, like basically your magic points, which again you can refill by destroying enemies and such, but it's just like it's literally a mechanic that you can just stop the game and just sit there and cry until you fill up your tier gauge and can summon a knight from hell to like destroy all of the ghosts. So I was prepared to come in here and like compare this to like maybe a Super Princess Peach, right? Where like crying, you know, or using your emotions like changes the landscape in some way, or, you know, helps assist. This game is, I want to say, about 60% crying and 40% other. It's incredible how much thought they put into actually just sitting there and weeping over everything. And that's just kind of a mood, you know? So, yeah, eventually she gets joined by other characters that she can summon and things like that. More ladies are introduced in the game. It's not an Idea Factory game, so I don't think you can date them, which is just fine because your protagonist is only 15. This game comes with all of the DLC that was on the previous versions, which apparently is just a bunch of like costumes and like music and things like that. Funny enough, in the initial DLC extra costumes that you get, you can dress her up as like things like Santa Claus and like a mascot. They actually, some of them do actually do things. Like one of them is the peddler's outfit, which if you talk to the peddler, which is a special butterfly that turns into a witch in the game, then you can get like a discount off of buying items and stuff. Like you can buy items. It's an RPG. I like that there's swimsuits, but they're actually scuba gear swimsuits. So they're not like sexy swimsuits. They're like literally she's got like an oxygen tank on her back and like big goggles and stuff. I thought that was actually kind of funny in a weird way. And then finally, there's Thelema, which is your dog. A big old floofer that is constantly at Race's bedside. And not only can you pet this dog every time you wake up, and she has conversations with the dog, which is a human voice actor going, woof!
Hey, but, works for me.
Literally, in the hub menu, there is a Thelema section where you can just sit there and pet the dog, and you can just leave it on a loop of her petting the dog. And it warms your heart, is what it says. And that's it.
Hey, that dog is awesome, though, so it's okay.
Yeah, this is not only a game where you can pet the dog, but there is an entire section of the menu dedicated to the petting of said dog.
Nice.
So that is Crystar in a nutshell.
Well, it's $50. What are your thoughts on it?
Okay, so I love everything about this game in the sense of I love the story. The music is really good. The graphics are really nice. Again, it runs smooth as butter for this kind of game being on Switch. This might just be me playing too many Idea Factory games that, you know, I play them on Switch and then buy them on PS4. But I was really impressed by that. The only thing is that the action never deviates from running around in a level and destroying things with a sword and then, you know, or a knight, you know, stopping to cry if you want to, and then like beating a boss. Like that is all of the gameplay. So if that is your thing, which again, if you're like a fan of something like El Shaddai or something, then you're already in. Then this is the game for you. However, if you are expecting something that's more of a complex type of RPG and such, then this isn't it. So at the $50 price point, I have to give it if you're a fan of like the beat 'em up and like, and of the anime, you know, the visual novel aspects and all of the quirks that go into that, then this is a buy it because it's very high quality. However, if you are looking for like another RPG from NIS, they have a lot more that are actually RPGs and you should look, you know, elsewhere over there or, you know, give it a try it.
Sounds good.
There you go. Yeah.
It works for me. Next game is Weird West, developed by Wolfeye Studios, published by Devolver Digital, released March 31st on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Also available as a part of Xbox Game Pass. Survive and unveil the mysteries of the Weird West through the intertwined destinies of its unusual heroes in an immersive sim from the co-creators of Dishonored and Prey. Tim, what's going on in Weird West?
Well, there's some weird shit going on.
I can tell. It sounds like there's some weird shit going on.
It lives up to its name. Yeah. So this game is kind of, it is made by the guy who worked on Dishonored and Prey. The game is like kind of an isometric, I shouldn't say isometric because you can whip your camera around, but it's like an overhead, like Fallout, like the old Fallouts, like pre-Fallout 3 Fallouts, Fallout 1 and 2 Fallouts. Those are decent touchstones for what you're looking at in this game, in that you have your character, you have your field map, you can rotate the camera around. It's not stuck in one position. But this is a game where you have options for how you are going to tackle the challenges before you and a lot of flexibility in how you want to play the game. I guess that's what immersive sim means. So yeah, it takes place in the West. It's not really specifying itself as the West that we are necessarily familiar with, because this West is all full of spooky shit. Right off the rip, it's like you're dealing with some dudes who, like this gang rolled into your town and like kidnapped your man, and they're going to feed them to their boss who is not human. And like, it's not too supernatural, like right at the beginning, but like the more you press out into the game's world, kind of the weirder shit is going to get. And the further you get in the game and the stories and those assorted protagonists, the more out there things get. Yeah. So you start out and you're this this woman who is a former bounty hunter who is long, you know, retired from the profession. But then, like, her kid gets killed by these guys and her husband kidnapped. And so she picks up her irons again. Those are guns in Wild West talk, and sets out to try to, you know, track these guys down and save your dude and all that stuff. So, you know, you go into town. Town's all beat up by the aforementioned gang. You kind of get some directions as to where they went, and then you go off chasing after them. And kind of like after you get past like this kind of initial, you know, kind of first couple missions thing. So the game has a like an overworld, not an overworld map, but just like a map. So when you walk out of like town, you are then picking your next destination on the map, and it will tell you how long it will take to travel there. And it just kind of shows like a little dotted line going across the map as you travel across it. And you could have some kind of random shit happen in the middle of your journey, or you could not. So just random things can pop up along the way, like merchants or encounters or, you know, hostile encounters or other encounters. But then, you know, you get to where you're going and there's some guys there and you got to do some stuff. So it's, you know, early on, you are trying to find out more information about where this gang took your guy. So you go into a camp, and here is where you have options, because you, of course, could just go in guns a-blazin'. You have guns. The guys carry, enemies carry guns that you can take off of them and then shoot them. And we're talking like pretty, you're not shooting lasers. It's handguns and shotguns and rifles, and there's a bow and arrow, and there's melee weapons and stuff like that. So you could go in there rooting, tooting, and shooting if you so choose. Kind of when you enter combat, the game becomes something like a twin stick shooter. Though things happen very fast. So I don't know. I wouldn't really recommend the, you know, guns blazing route. Unless that's, you know, you're really got some good guns and a lot of ammo and you're really ready to go for it. There is stealth in this game, so you can sneak around and knock guys out, and then you have to take their body and, you know, throw it in the bushes so it doesn't get found. But, you know, you go at this camp and then it's like, okay, you're just sneaking around. Ultimately, there are different ways to get to the objective you need to find. It is kind of like an underground little tunnel system, and there's different ways down there. It's like, okay, there's a trap door in the house that's here. You can get down through the well. You can do this other thing. And then once you get down there, it's like, okay, there's some encounters down here. It's like, okay, do I want to try to sneak up and take this one guy out? Do I want to try to throw in a stick of dynamite to blow up this like toxic barrel in the middle and hopefully like blow everybody up when they walk by it? Not so much the conversation in this game as you would find in a Fallout. And that's where I guess it becomes more like Dishonored. It's like you have options, but they're not chitty chatty. They can still be non-lethal, but they're not, you're not going in and like talking to bad guys and just like kind of schmoozing them into giving you what you want. But yeah, so once you do that and it's kind of like you get a lead on where they got, well, the lead you get is a like telegram message that you need to have translated. At that point, the person who will do it is like, well, I need $300 to do it. And so now it's like, okay, now I need to start kind of more treading my own path, and I got to go out and earn some money, which you can do just by exploring. More likely you're going to pick up some bounties, in Wild West fashion, grab some bounties off the bounty board, and then you have to go track guys down and bring them in dead or alive. And all the while you're doing this, because they're wanted. Like there are folks who are giving you side quests to rescue other people, to do favors for them. And then, you know, you're hauling in these bounty hunters. And as you're doing these things, you are building up like a reputation with the town, and you are building up relationships with characters that may cause them to just randomly like pop up in your battles to help you out, like in a firefight or something like that. So they'll kind of remember, you know, what you have done for them or to them. You know, if dude gets out of prison, he might be coming after you later to make your life miserable. But the game gives you a lot of freedom, not just like in the individual encounters, but kind of even in the direction you want to go as you're exploring and tackling the game. Like, it tells you, like, at that point, it's like, hey, you can go wherever you want, but just know, like, the further you push out into the west, like, the more dangerous it could get, and you could find yourself in some real shit, you know? It gives you the warning, but it lets you go, you know? You can pick up like companions to roll around with you who will give you added firepower, maybe more importantly, added storage space, as you're picking up a lot of stuff off of bad guys. Like, most bodies have, you know, the guy's weapon, like some ammo, or maybe like a couple trinkets that you could sell, just junk you could sell in a shop. Some more storage space is good. Mechanics and leveling up, you don't gain experience in this game, but you find like items that will grant you ability points or perks, and you can choose how to spend them. So abilities will be things like kind of special abilities with your guns. So they have one where you can just fan the hammer in your pistol, shoot out all the bullets at once, more bullets. I favor this, the first one you can get with the rifle, where like your first shot is completely silent, which is just a good way, you know, pick off a guy in a crowd, just assassinate someone from a distance and make your life easy. So you'll get abilities that pertain to your weapons and also to the character that you're playing. The game is broken down into different chapters where you are controlling different characters. And there is a storyline that kind of, but you're also always playing kind of the same character, which is probably sounds a little confusing, but the game has a method, and reasoning why you're kind of jumping from character to character, in this game. And each character has a different, ability tree and different abilities that you can upgrade and try out. But everybody shares the same perks, which are more just kind of general, broad, passive things. When you're in combat, there is some like bullet time slowdown mechanics. If you do like a jump in the middle of combat, time will slow down so you can aim your shots and they do more damage. It takes like some of your ability points, but you know, it's good stuff. I think the game is kind of like a little bit messy in the way that these games tend to be, in that because they give you so much freedom, things can feel like a little loosey-goosey at some points, with just kind of the way things work, and just kind of glitchiness and weirdness. But it comes with the territory, and they, you know, get right to the point of giving you freedom and options and things to do, and like everything you're doing feels pretty good and is satisfying to like sneak around and discover stuff and like think out situations and try to figure out like the best way to approach something. And like the overall just kind of tone of the game with this like spooky horror Wild West thing, I think works like really well and kind of keeps you on your toes, because you never really know if the person that you just shot is going to like suddenly jump up and respawn as like some horrible monster along the way. I do wish, like, so the camera kind of hangs up in like a three quarters view, and there's like three different zoom levels for it, but you can't like just kind of zoom in and out. It just, there are three, you know, predetermined distances. And like, I just wish it could be like a little bit further out from the closest one. I also wish you could like pan it in a bit lower to the ground to get like line of sight of what your character is seeing. Cause sometimes like, you know, you'll have a stable or some kind of like open air building where it's just hard to see what your character is looking at. It's just hard to get a sense of like where, you know, enemies might be standing in like under an overhang sometimes. And sometimes enemies can just be hard to spot. Like I'm playing this on Xbox on a TV. So my weary old man eyes, sometimes I would have trouble discerning. Like I could see on like the mini map, like, okay, there is a red dot up there, there is an enemy, but I couldn't like quite pick them out because they're brown blending with brown. I wish they had some kind of like just outline you could put on enemies, like when they're in your field of vision, just to pop more for you, the player. But you know, I I think it does a good job with everything. It's a fun game. It has difficulty settings that you can adjust anytime, so you can play it harder or easier as you so choose. It's just generally fun to get in there and play around and do stuff.
I like the emphasis on exploration as well. Like, you'll go into an area and it seems very linear, but if you decide to go off the beaten path and maybe jump up those rocks over there, you might explore and find a machete just hanging out that you could grab and use. Or the fun they had with the achievements. I got an achievement for jump kicking a bird.
Nice. Very cool.
Jump up, kick a bird, you get an achievement.
My one big pet peeve in this game is that it keeps your game clock ticking as you're in sleep mode. So I've played this game for like 50 hours. I'm playing it right now, actually. It's just something that always just really irritates me for like no real good reason other than I'm just like, I care too much about how much time I put into a game, but whatever.
It doesn't help with this one where there's timed quests.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't keep
ticking. That's good.
No, that doesn't keep ticking. It's just like, it just keeps counting your in-game timer.
All right.
Yeah. You're not going to, there are some quests, like Joe just said, that are timed, but those are just like the individual quests. Like, it's not the full quest line. Like, oh, you have to complete, you know, whatever for this character in 20 days or else you can't do it. You know, you're not running against a clock. You're running against the clock on a very small level. It's just like, oh, you have to haul in. Well, it's like one of the first things, like this lady asks you to save her husband who's been kidnapped. And it's like, you have 5 days to do it or else presumably the guy will be killed and you can't save him anymore. So you got to get on that. Can't just dick around in the West. Like, okay, that's a priority. But that was like, I think the tightest time limit I saw, like I had a bounty, but it was like days and it was taking me at that time, like, you know, maybe a half day's walk to get to where he was. Yeah.
Well, the game's sitting at $40. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's on Game Pass, but it's worth buying if you do not have a piece of hardware that you can play or subscribe to Game Pass on. I think it's well worth that amount of money. I saw, you know, a lot of people were spending 40 hours with it to finish the game, so that's a pretty good dollar to hour ratio. But you'll have a lot of fun with it along the way. It is worth your time, and it is also worth your money.
Nice. Right. Hey, I have a question before we let you go for the evening on this game. It's called Weird West, but there's like no affiliation with Deadlands or like that role playing game system, right? Because that's what I think of when I hear that name. I thought that was copyrighted too. Okay, interesting.
Not that I'm aware of.
It's a good game. Cool. Thanks for letting me pick your brain about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You mean stick the pick in and take that nugget of information.
Got graphic there. I'm liking it.
All right. Well, Tim, that is it for you.
I'm going to bed.
Yeah. Night, night, Tim.
Do you have any final words?
No, I don't. No.
Nothing about WrestleMania?
Oh, shit.
I don't know. It seemed like it was, I didn't really watch much of it other than Cody Rhodes making
his appearance. Did you watch the Johnny Knoxville match?
No, I have not seen
the Johnny. You need to watch the Johnny Knoxville match.
I will.
The Jackass Johnny Knoxville?
Yes. Yeah, it was a Jackass match from the things I saw on Twitter.
Yeah, it was pretty fantastic.
There was a giant hand and a giant mousetrap and Wee Man, and there was a lot of nonsense.
Fucking Wee Man body slam Sami Zayn.
It seemed like it was a very...
was that part of like what was going into like the description for the match when they went over? Just like, hey, we're having a wrestling match, and then something giant hands.
Yes,
yes, we're having a match, and here's a giant hand. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's pretty fantastic.
It seemed like it was very sports entertaining. Just not, you know.
It was.
Yeah,
sports entertainment.
Yeah.
Brought to you in part by
fucking Weird World. The world of pro wrestling / sports entertainment.
Yes.
It's bizarre. All right. Good night,
friends. Good night. All right. Night. Moving on.
The button's over here. Okay. Yeah.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is In Nightmare, developed by Beijing Magic Fish Technology, published by Maximum Games, released March 29th on PS4 and PS5 for $19.99. Experience the effects of a broken family and the heartache it brings. A young child escapes into a dark, whimsical dream world created from his memories. In this twisted nightmare, his past trauma manifests as terrifying monsters that seek to trap him here, which sets him on a journey to uncover what truly lies within his mind. Pernell, tell us about your time with In Nightmare.
Okay, well, In Nightmare is an interesting little game that if you're not a fan of seeing kids dealing with some unfortunate shit, you might not be down for this. And honestly, who really is? So I'm not going to use that as a final thing. But overall, I'm still enjoying the game. Point is, it's a hard game. Let me get to the actual review, starting over. Yes, I realize I shouldn't have did it that way. All right. So the idea behind this game is you're unfortunately scared young lad who is made to run through the, I guess, like a nightmare realm created within his own psyche. And the nightmare realm is composed of multiple areas that are all made up of areas of his life and scenarios in his life that have caused him trauma. They give you like documentation lining the stages that go into further detail. And oh my God, they get into really huge detail, but not really a spoiler. It's just the premise of the game. He's dealing with some stuff. The stuff resulted in him going into like a sort of coma. And that's why he's trapped in this nightmare realm. The environments of the game that you explore generally are like gatekept by various traps and hazards and also stalked by nightmarish apparitions crafted again of his own young mind. And the way you are able to get around these things is actually pretty interesting. It's a little bit of a stealth gameplay style. Early on in the game, you get access to a butterfly friend named like Beaky or Bickley or something like that. And it's a golden butterfly that has a few quick functions. It is able to illuminate itself, which allows it to brighten the area around it. You can send Bickley off into the distance, a small distance initially, but if you hit the R2 button, you can also do something called overclocking it and send her off farther into the distance. So she does like a bit of reconnaissance work for you to see threats and dangers that you really don't want to put Bill in the presence of directly to witness. The other thing she can do is turn blue and go into something called detect mode, which allows you to like sort of like an infrared pretty much an infrared or a black light sort of thing where you can like look for like footprints, you know, it reveal like walls that are actually fake walls, stuff like that. So it's good for scouting around and looking for like secret pathways that are meant to be hidden from you. Now, as you're exploring around these areas, the so-called hazards I was referring to are generally monsters, unpleasant monsters, that if they catch you, it's not so much game over so much as it is return to the last checkpoint and try it again. But it's typically a form of them stalking you. Different monsters, but they ultimately just end up stalking you. And when you're in a situation where this takes place, the game's goal is to pretty much get from point A to point B without being seen. So you'll find yourself doing things like hiding under desks or tables, hiding in bushes, hiding in cabinets. The cabinet ones I always found to be particularly funny because like a monster will be chasing you. And it's like, okay, you got to make enough of a distance away from the monster, then climb into the closet. And then you have to kind of sit there and just hang back and hope that the monster doesn't see you while there's like a little clock in this lower left corner. That's like pretty much counting down how far away the monster is from you. So you're kind of like, I hope the monster doesn't find me. I hope the monster doesn't find me. And it was like 2 meters away from you. So it gets to be pretty interesting. Though, for better or for worse, depending on how you look at it, there's a particular effect the game puts on when you are in close contact with a monster that's chasing you, or even not chasing you, it's just you're near it. And that is that the game has like a bit of a hazy, wavy filter put over it, which can really mess with your eyes. I'm pretty sure that's the intent. But I can imagine some people being like, oh, God, I wish you could just turn this crap off. And maybe you can. I don't know. I didn't bother with the settings that much, but I didn't see anything outright that said turn off wavy gravy filter. But if it's there, you might want to use it. But otherwise, just letting you know it's there in advance. There are also some weird upgrade systems that this game has, too. Like I mentioned before, you have the detect mode and the light mode for the butterfly. And those things can run out over time. Like, there's like an energy meter that you can't really see. It's just you kind of have to know when it's out. Because when it ultimately runs up, the game will tell you Bickley's out of consciousness or out of dream energy, at which point you have to use, you know, limited use items to restore those things. You can find that hidden around the dungeons or the areas you're exploring too, to replenish that energy. In addition to that, there's also an item called a dream orb. It's like a light grenade. You throw it, boom, it splashes, and enemies that are nearby will kind of get stunned, which is meant to give you time to run and hide and find cover. But all these things can be upgraded if you can find a variety of different things littered throughout the map. You might be chasing around like a little ghostly blue elk in certain areas. Other times you might come across a yellow fountain that someone did not pee in. It's actually dream energy, and you can collect that. And there's a variety of just different objects or things that you can locate that result in various upgrade chains. The weird thing about those, though, is that I honestly had a hard time keeping track of what item upgraded what thing. I just was grabbing whatever I could grab when the game said, you have more dream orbs you can throw. I was like, thank you. I need that. Otherwise, I wasn't keeping track of what was upgrading what. Just find a hidden thing, take home if you make it home. It's interesting in a sense with this game because on one hand, there were moments where I kind of felt like, okay, I'm a little tired. I'm not really all that drawn. I'm kind of ready to put this down. But then there were other times where I was like, you know, I like the music that's taking place. I like the idea that I like exploring this environment. I like the fact that I'm now being hunted by giant eyeball critters. This is kind of cool. But it has like levels of inconsistency where sometimes I was really engaged. Other times I was like, okay, well, I'm just tired. So it's not really a bad thing. It's just a thing. I don't know. Like, I do wish that the story sequences that you could come across as you played the game had voices. What I mean by that is every once in a while you'll open a door or walk into a room and you'll go into like this hazy state where in this scenario, like silhouettes of characters in Bill's life and sometimes Bill himself will be displayed on the screen and are engaging in this acting out a scene in Bill's life. Always traumatic because this poor kid had it bad somehow. But sometimes you have trouble determining what is actually happening in a scene. Like, is he yelling at him? Is he just talking to him coldly? Is he handing him a milkshake? I can't tell. It's just this white, hazy, lighted people standing in a room. And since they're not voiced, you're made to interpret what's going on. But, again, not a bad, bad thing. Just would have been nice if they spoke sometimes to kind of hammer home what is happening in the scene that I'm witnessing right now. But then other times there were things where I was very unhappy because, for the record, anything that involves kids getting bullied, I can't fucking stand. Not from from a narrative perspective, it's fine. It's just, it really gets me into the narrative and it's just like, I want to beat these people up, but I can't because they're actually memories in his life. But if they were monsters in the game that I could attack, I'd probably spend the entire time searching them out and beating the snot out of them. That's just me. So I'm not a...
What about you, Brooke? Do you like beating up monsters and bullies?
You know, I didn't have quite the same experience as Purnell with this game. This isn't normally the type of game I would go for, but like, I don't know. I feel like with the indie scene in the last 10 years, I've played a lot of games that are like really heavy, especially, with all that content around like trauma and child abuse. And I didn't play as much as Purnell did. So I'm sure there are some really dark things that I didn't get to, but you know, I kind of have the opposite reaction of Purnell. I do feel really protective for some forms of media, but other types of media that approach trauma like this, I think a lot of people who went through harder times when they were younger could really connect with that and find it validating. I think you're either going to go one of two ways with content like this. You're either going to want to beat up all the people in Purnell's life. I mean, in the kid's life, if you're Purnell. Wow.
My life too.
Which I love about Purnell. Like, That's probably one of the things we all love the most about him. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Or you're going to feel validated being like, if you were a kid who was treated like Bill, you could be like, oh, it's not just me. Adults suck. They're so shitty. And that's normalizing. So I kind of like that type of content. As far as gameplay and just overall craft of the game, I have to say I was really, really impressed with this. Like, this game is huge. It's got a shitload of content. Like, when you end the tutorial and they dump you in that main room with like all the gears and glass and stuff, it's a really beautiful game. Like, I found this game really moving visually. Like, the light effects are really cool, the sound effects are creepy. I think it's really immersive. I did have times like Purnell did where like I'm either really engaged and I'm like scared to death doing some stalk thing to try to get away from a monster, or, you know, I get a little bored on some levels. But overall, I think this game, it's kind of got an overwhelming amount of content in it for like, and I feel like I've barely scratched the surface. There's so many things that I haven't unlocked yet, and there's so many things that I won't unlock unless I've like done certain achievements in the game. And all of those things you can unlock are really tangible in the sort of like centralized hub. That just like really, really well crafted and beautifully made. Like if you get certain achievements that allow you to have certain like abilities or perks, there's like a statue that will light up in the middle. Cool. There's like shitloads of different rooms just within this hub to represent the different style of level you're going to want to get into. So if you do like this game, if this game does bite you and you want to play it, like you're going to have so much content. I can't remember how much this goes for. How much is this?
It is sitting at $20. So what do the two of you think about this one?
This isn't normally the type of thing I would personally go for, but like I did find it to be super immersive, and I think that $20, this is a ridiculous amount of content. Like if you want to sneak around and be scared to death and like kind of experience this stuff with the kid, I don't think it's too puzzly either. Like we have kind of like these linear levels, but for me, like there was kind of more than one way to do things at certain times. Like you can knock over a vase to try to distract a monster so you can get away in like a secret passage, or you can try to like take it on another way. I thought that was neat. When I first was doing the tutorial, I was like, oh, this game's super, super linear. There aren't going to be very many choices. And it's pretty linear, but like not as much as I was initially expecting by the style of the game. So in that since I think it exceeds expectations in a lot of ways.
Cool. Pernell, your thoughts?
I feel like it's on the strong end of the try spectrum, as in the more positive end of it. Because I did enjoy my time with the game. It wasn't simply a matter of like, ho-hum, kid exploring, I'm done. It was more like, hey, I want to help this kid out, and this is an interesting adventure exploring, you know, environments that were crafted meant to, based around the idea of a child's psyche and how, you know, affected it was by negative circumstances. I definitely appreciated these things, but I also know there is a contingent of folks up there that are like, well, I would have liked it more if you could have punched the eyeball monster in the face. Like, well, you can't.
Oh, yeah.
He's a kid, okay? And there's no blood and gore either, so tough to bullies for that too, folks. But as long as you don't care about those things, you're on easy street for an interesting adventure.
It's neat. It almost kind of represents the journey the kid is having, where like he's undergone so much psychic trauma that he's in a coma, like he's immobilized. The fact that you kind of can't fight back from the monsters and you can only run and sneak in a lot of ways and levels, like, I don't know, kind of like if you're into feeling like that powerlessness of being a child and just having to be scared and wait things out and find your way out of it as you grow up, like I think what they were trying to do is what they went for too. And like I'm gonna call it a buy it, even though I'm not normally into games that are quite like this. I think that if you're considering buying this game, pull up just a little preview of like what the tutorial looks like in the gameplay on YouTube. Like, I think it's a really beautiful game. It's weird to compare it to a game like Catherine, but it kind of kept reminding me of that. Pernell, have you played that?
Oh, you're talking about tower climbing, Catherine?
Yeah, and I haven't played that in such a long time. This has been 10 years ago at this point, but like it was just really, the way I would first and foremost describe this game is that it's really atmospheric, and it's in the same way that Catherine is, it's kind of got like a little bit of a dark sense of humor, but mostly kind of like just a dark, really immersive, like beautiful, like visually well-crafted world. Like,
but thankfully, it's a different form of stress, because good
Catherine is stressful. I can't say that like Catherine was one of my favorite games of all time ever, and like just the gameplay and like what you have to do to get through the levels. But like I'll never forget, like that was one of my, I played that before I played any Persona games. So like that was really, for me, like that was my first really big atmospheric game like that, that really sucked me in and kind of, you know, kind of felt like an anime. And although this game doesn't really have anime stuff going on, it's kind of got that, like if you like that sort of thing, I really think anybody who watched a short video of the gameplay and it appealed to them would get a lot out of this game and a shitload of hours of entertainment out of it, to say the least.
Cool. Sounds good to me. Any other thoughts?
It better.
I'm glad Pernell and I finally, we didn't really disagree, but I want to like really disagree on a game that I tagged with Pernell.
There you go, Brie.
Like, have it out, dude.
We'll find something.
This game sucks. I changed my review. It's a terrible game. Brooke liked the game. Do what you want.
Brooke
people.
Liked it. Ew.
Well, Pernell called it a try it. I guess it's a buy it from me, is all I'm going to say.
Boys have cooties. Deny it.
Harsh, but fair. Too true.
All right, next up is Escados, developed and published by Cute Corporation, released April 4th on the PS4 for $26.99. Hardcore vertical scrolling shoot 'em up game with fast-paced, exhilarating speed and sci-fi world reminiscent of the 80s. Chris, what's going on in this?
Reminiscent of the 80s? What?
Escados, kick your balls. Escados, kick your face. Escados, kick your balls into outer space. I had to do it. I just felt it.
That's so much better than my review.
So, $27. What's your verdict?
Yeah, I know, right? Okay, so yes, this is it's time for the shmup block, I guess. At least as far as like my reviews are concerned. So yes, Escados, we finally have it on the modern systems.
Except Xbox. God damn it! Bring it to Xbox.
I know, which is funny because it was originally on the Xbox 360.
It's so shitty.
And
in the States,
despite being a Japan-only release, it actually is an unregion-locked game. So this is a good one for like those folks who like to import those shmups from Japan, especially like the cave shooters and stuff. Funny enough, I actually thought this was a cave shooter for a while, and then like I learned better that it's a whole different company, and it's Cute with a Q. So yeah, this is like that. This is a kind of a bullet hell vertically scrolling a shoot 'em up, and Yeah. Oh, okay, I see. I was saying Joe correct Carnage there, and I was like, wait, what did I say? And I was like, no, wait, I said it right.
I thought you were like, I have a ghost reviewer, don't tell anybody. What should I say?
Yeah, no, I accidentally read chat. I shouldn't
say that. Satan is talking into Chris's ear right now, telling him what he's supposed to say on the show.
Telling me the wrong ways to short the word Japanese. Anyways, so yes, this is a shooter from Cute, and basically the thing about the game is that one has to stall for time when reviewing it because it's so dedicated to being simple and simplistic. There's not a whole lot to say about it. You have two shots on your ship, and you get to choose between two ships. One is red, one is blue. I don't think there's a difference between them. And so you got your stronger, straightforward shot, and then you got your spread shot, which is pretty common. That's pretty standard operating procedure for a shoot 'em up. However, the spread shot is actually only about half of the screen's worth of distance. So you actually can't just spread shot everything in the game. You actually have to get a little closer. And that also has probably my least favorite. Well, no, not my least favorite, but one of among my lesser favorite features in a shmup, and that is the bullet absorbing shield that you have to like pay attention to. That is like extremely short range, that you kind of have to use it to get through certain walls of bullets, and of course it's one of those things, you absorb enough shots and then it reflects them back and stuff like that. However, that does play into this game a little bit more in the advanced mode than the regular mode. This is very much a shooter that you can just lay on the one of the two different kinds of shots and just get through everything. Of course, it's wave after wave of enemies shooting pretty bullets at you, and then you get to the boss, which is, got that... the bosses are really gigantic in this game. It's like it changes the camera angle and you're kind of flying around them and stuff. Like there's a UFO that's the first boss where you have to like, destroy all the different sections of it as it like passes by. And it's just like, really, really huge. And, of course it's got that spectacle that we all enjoy in the shmup, community. I don't know what, I guess it's a community, whatever. So yeah, it's a frenzy of bullets and things like that. The game has a few different options. Of course, this is a vertically scrolling shmup, so it only takes up about 30% of the screen, just right down the middle. And this is a PS4 game, so it does not have that Tate mode that is so popular on the Switch games, which this is available on the Switch. And it's been on my wish list since it got announced. So. But yeah, like it's basically got that. The other thing is that like You can set the amount of lives that you have up to 9, but you start off with only 1 credit. This is one of those kind of games that you actually unlock more stuff through gameplay. I think it's on a timer, because as I kept playing it and not making a whole lot of progress, it kept giving me more continues. So this is one of those, you know, I kind of like that system. I've always appreciated it because, you know, it kind of makes you not just breeze through the game in like the first 20 minutes by using rich kid strats and just dumping in more quarters. But it doesn't lock you out of being able to get to the end by, you know, severely limiting you on lives and continues. So it kind of encourages you to spend more time with the game and get like kind of better at it organically, but also, you know, give you eventually hands you the keys as it goes. So, yeah, the main thing that I think is the selling point on Escatos, it actually says the title, like, at the beginning, and I forgot it still.
Escatos,
thank you. Yeah. The thing that I think it has going for it the most is the soundtrack. The soundtrack is legendary. It's basically like the Lost Mega Man X soundtrack that we all, you know, we've all wanted. Yeah, definitely pull up the music of Escatos and give it a listen sometime. It is just amazing. And it's not like just, you know, djent or metal or something like that, like what you hear in some modern shmups. It's like, it is seriously like some good old fashioned action game rock. And I really, really enjoy it. So that's the game in a nutshell. Like I said, there's not a whole lot to say about it because it is so simple and just like kind of on the nose. You know, it has leaderboards, everything like that. Who cares? like the original Xbox 360 release, this does come with the other two cute games that precede it, which are, I always have to pull them up,
Judgment, Silver Sword, and Cardinal Sins.
Yes, exactly. So Judgment, Silver Sword, both of the games actually were originally released on the Bandai Wonder Swan. They're very good for what they are. That is to say, they're basically 8-bit shmups on a handheld system. And Judgment Silver Sword is super good. It's really interesting because it's basically like you go through a whole lot of levels, but each level is only 10 to 15 seconds long. It's basically a wave of enemies and then a stronger enemy that's kind of like a boss. And then eventually you come across like some bigger bosses and bigger bosses. But like, it's like round one, and then you like shoot a bunch of things. It's like, okay, round two. And you're like, what? Cardinal Sins came out afterwards, and it's kind of like this. It's the exact same graphics, except that they kind of give it a more horror spin. And there's a couple of other little things about it. But I mean, the thing to know about it is that these are two very tiny but very well-meaning games, again, with great soundtracks, and they run like really, really smooth on modern displays, which is really nice. And yet what I like about them is that in the options, because they're so small on the actual screen because of the original resolution and like the aspect ratio, you can zoom in so far that you can actually cut out about 30% of the top and bottom of the game and just look at the middle of it.
Oh, wow.
And it still does not touch the sides of your TV. it's really funny in that way. I don't recommend actually doing that except just as a laugh because you're going to miss most of the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, these are a really fun romp. Definitely like a, you know, just another, you know, another trophy for the case as far as like great shmups that are finally coming to like modern systems and such and in the U.S., except for Xbox, I guess.
Yeah, bitches. $26.99. What do you think?
Oh, man. Well, okay. So if you are a shmup fan, then this is a foregone conclusion. Go ahead and get it. If $26 is your budget for a really rockin' shmup and you are, let's say you're currently shmupless, honestly, there are better games than this that I would probably recommend before getting into this one, just because of the, like I said, the simplicity and otherwise. So yeah, at 26, it's one of those, it's a definite buy it if you have already checked out all of the other great, like for instance, the cave shooters, you know, your Mushihime Sama, Espagluda. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Espagluda.
Close enough.
Espagula.
Espatula.
yeah, a spatula. And, you know, all, other things like that. Like, as long as you've, you know, checked out the other good bullet hells and such, and this is, you know, like I said, it's another trophy for the case. It's an excellent, excellent game and totally worth every penny. But at the $20 range, there are better. So, you know, it's a contender, but, you know, I'd shop around if this is, like, going to be your first one.
Better shop around, shop. Ooh, yeah. Shop around.
Pernell gets worried if he hasn't spoken in long enough that he doesn't, that he's a ghost and he doesn't exist anymore, which might be true.
Well, he's also constantly playing Elden Ring these days, so he's pretending to pay attention when he does these little songs. He's like, oh shit, I gotta let him know I'm still here.
Tell everybody.
It's not like you're gonna get in trouble.
True.
It is true.
Video games? God damn you.
God damn it, Pernell.
What are you doing, Pernell? Dying repeatedly.
I'm certainly not over here playing my Super Nintendo with another tab open watching somebody else play Elden Ring.
It's like, I bought the game. What are you going to do? Watch someone else play it. That's how I do it. Shoot.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Wingspan, developed and published by Monster Couch, available on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $19.99. In Wingspan, up to 5 players compete to build up their nature preserves in a limited number of turns. Each beautiful bird that you add to your preserve makes you better at laying eggs, drawing cards, or gathering food. Many of the 170 unique birds have powers that echo real life. Your hawks will hunt, your pelicans will fish, and your geese will form a flock. Pernell, what's going on in Wingspan?
They totally missed a chance to say, your geese will be dicks.
Can I right quick interject a shout out to the name Monster Couch? I love that.
Monster Couch. They're going to jam tonight with Monsters Evil. Anyway, I got to stop singing songs from my experience, my childhood, because
no,
I
can write all day. Don't have to stop.
Wingspan is actually a game that when Joe offered it to me, it was a foregone conclusion I was going to like it, specifically because I already own the main game, the European Birds expansion, and the Oceania expansion for tabletop. So this was just me being like, am I going to like the digital component as well? Well, before going into the review proper, I'm just going to flat out tell you, yes, I do think this is great. So, but what is the actual freaking game? What is Wingspan? Well, it's a very straightforward product. The idea is you start out being dealt a hand of 5 birds and one of every food resource item in the game, so that's a total of 5. You have to choose 5 of these to keep. So if you keep one of the birds, you got to get rid of one of the food items to compensate for keeping the bird. And if you decide not to keep a bird, that means that's one piece of food you can keep. The reason why this is a delicate balance is because on your turn, you have one of 4 actions you can take. You can either place a bird, and to do that on your board, you have to have the required amount of food that they like to eat. So if a bird eats worms, you got to have a worm token, and so on and so forth. And you can place it in one of the environments that it has, that is allowed to exist in. So you might have a bird that can exist in the grasslands, or a bird that can exist in the plains, or bird that exists in the forest, or all 3. So that's the first action you can take. And the second one, well, 2nd through 4th, is you can actually utilize one of the 3 places I earlier named, the forest, the plains, and the wetland. Now, when you do that, each of these locations has a specific type of function associated with them. The forest involves collecting food. The plains involve laying eggs. And the wetlands involves drawing cards. Now, ultimately, the level of power you have associated with those actions is based around how many birds you've already placed in that particular region. So let's say, for example, you want to collect food. You have 1 bird already on the field. Well, let's say you have no birds on the field. You can draw 1 food item from the reserve of food items that are existent in the food pile. But if you have 1 bird already there, now you have a little bit more of a powerful action where you can draw 1 food item, but also you can give up 1 card to draw another food item. You can only do it once, though, so you can't be like, I got 5 cards, 5 food. Doesn't work that way, chump, but nice try. And then the other items, you lay eggs. Lay up from 2 eggs up to like 4 eggs, and you can also get rid of an item in order to lay an extra egg.
And lastly, for the wetlands, you can draw one card and then draw one card, but give up an egg to draw a second card, and two cards and so forth. Now, the other added component to what I just said is, in addition to having more powerful abilities based on how many birds you've put in the region, is that you can also activate every bird that you've put in that region, because the birds themselves have abilities too. Sometimes the ability is based off of when you place it for the first time. Other times the ability kicks in when you've activated that region of land or region of terrain. And some of these abilities are really good for chaining with each other. So you might have one that says draw like one food item, but then this other one might say draw an additional food item that matches one of the food items that the bird that you have on the field eats. Or you might have one that says draw an extra card, but then also place an extra card beneath one of the birds in your terrain, which is a scoring mechanism in the game. I'm rambling like the Dickens in that sense, because a lot of people might be hearing this and going, what the hell is he talking about? I'm not looking at the game board. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. And that's fine. You're not really meant to, but you're meant to kind of get an understanding of the fact that there are a lot of actions and strategies you can employ in this game, despite the fact that you technically only have four actions you can take per round or per turn. Now, each round, of which there are four, has a different number of turns, which is very interesting for a game like this. And that's because the very first round, you have about eight different actions you can take, or eight turns of actions you can take. At the end of that round, each individual round has a specific like goal that is attributed to that round. And they're unique per game, because you can kind of get shuffled up and kind of thrown out there. Yeah, that's right, baby. And you're ultimately gunning for each of those goals each particular round. You know what they are in advance, so if you see a goal that you can shoot for that's in round three, but you can start shooting for it in round one, you can do that. But at the end of each round, that particular round's goal comes into effect. And based on how you place on getting the goal determines how many points you can get for achieving it. Now, the way the game marks what you've done or who's placed where on that round is by taking one of your turn markers and placing it on that board, which means for the subsequent rounds, that's one less turn that you get to take for the round. So as the game progresses, you actually get less and less turns, but that's balanced out by the fact that as the game has progressed, you have more things going on in your tableaus of birds activating. So you're like, okay, well, even though I only have six turns versus eight at the beginning of the game, I got some kick-ass birds on the field, so I'm going to maximize every action I get. It's going to be superb. One thing I just like the idea behind this game being the fact that in my opinion anyway, as simple as it is, there's some nice strategy involved, which makes it a game that's fairly easy to teach other people, but you won't feel like you need something heavier or more complicated to have your share of fun. I can play this game with people who aren't the most familiar with board games as like a beginner's entry to the games, and even after they've gotten into it and they want to move on to heavier things, they still enjoy this game. And that would work for this digital version, too. Now, one critique I have that's specific to the digital version, and then I'll also talk about some of the features that it does have that are digital exclusive, per se, is the fact that the interface takes some getting used to. I mean, it's not really the game's fault, in my opinion. There's a lot you want to keep track of on this game. You want to look at all the abilities your birds can do. You want to look at the food you have in your inventory. You want to look at the birds that are available to be drafted on the draw cards action. And you only have the switch screen with which to do it. But they did a surprisingly good job of having buttons being utilized to bring up the cards you're holding in your hand or look at the other player's board. And they don't use words to do it. It's all indicated by way of actual imagery on the screen. But I do like that. But it does take getting used to. The game has a tutorial in it. Don't be a brave person. Just freaking use the damn thing. You'll be glad you did, and you'll get more enjoyment out of the game you paid money for. But basically, after that tutorial and maybe one round of play, it'll be like second nature to you, and you'll be all about putting those birds out and getting some squawk-a-dockle-doo going on in this game.
Squawk-a-dockle-doo.
Yeah, damn right.
Approved.
Yes, Joe has to approve it now, or he's going to be outvoted.
I guess it's approved. Squawkle dockle do.
Yeah.
I also want to approve as the Dickens that Purnell used earlier. I really enjoyed that. I love that.
That comes from having family that was raised in the South.
Cool. Yeah, that's classic.
Nice.
Now, another, but like I said, like that's like only, that's the funny thing. That's like the only real downside is the fact that it takes getting used to, because there's a lot going on the screen, all being manipulated and worked on. But you can get over that. It's a hurdle that can be overcome. Now, with that said, though, now as far as like unique things for the game that you can't really get on a tabletop is the fact that the tabletop game has an automa feature available to it, which is usually where you draw a card or something, and it does a sequence of actions based on a stack of cards that are on the table or whatever. I like that those games, those things exist in games, but I've never been the biggest fan of them, because technically you're still manipulating something to see what happens or whatever. But it's not bad, it's just, it could be better. Well, this is a video game, and in the video game, you can just say, I'm playing Automa, and you're actually playing with essentially a computerized person using the Automa functionality. And it's kind of fun to work that way, because it's like you're basically playing with a stranger that functions with enough variability that you have to employ a strategy to try to win. I do enjoy that. And you can actually, funny enough, like the game has a voice in it, in that every bird card has like a description based on its actual real world counterpart. And when you play a bird on the screen, it actually reads it out of like, this bird loves eating acorns out of a tree trunk's butt, or whatever it wants to say. What? And that's kind of cool. Yeah, I made that up because I don't remember any specific bird facts.
Yeah, I just know they have that one up.
You couldn't tell. That's what the redwood sapsucker does. So in your face, Joe. like it's like it's kind of cool how it does that, because even if I don't particularly remember the facts because I have the memory of a gnat, I do like the fact that it's there, and it does feel nice to have the game telling me about these nice birds. I feel like over repeated plays of hearing some of these things, it may even stick with me. So if you're I kind of always forget the word for it, but it's not avian in this case. Almost like Oriander or something like that, whatever. If you're
Ori in the Blind Forest, did you beat Ori yet, by the way?
Oh, dear God. Cole from the Cole lives on
from no, beyond the grave.
Say that, that's pre-Brook era.
I haven't beat it one day.
Brooke's like, I have more fucking references I have to learn for this stupid show.
That's dude, right. I'm happy I got a PB, an acronym, pre-Brook. I like that.
It works for pre-Brook and post-Brook.
Ooh, oh, just not even think about that though. That's a universe we don't even want to.
Chris
go
is
down.
Planning ahead.
Do a double.
No, I'm already planning my demise.
No, not your demise. Your promotion. Down. You're going to get a promotion.
Ooh.
From someone might listen to someone does listen podcast.
Oh, nice. Whoa. I really SDL. Want to hold out for that Purnell Wrangler promotion.
The Purnell Wrangler.
Yeah, Purnell's
freaking out. What do we do? Quick, get the garbage girl kids out. Ooh, gross.
That would be a rough job to have on this show, the Purnell Wrangler. Like, uh-oh, the Purnell's getting loose again.
I thought it was some kind of pants endorsement.
It would be a rewarding job. You would love it.
Purnell song lyric documenter. Purnell note taker. I got a bright future.
All right, on the 58th minute of the 32nd second, Purnell said the following, me, something, something, something with words. He also said that Wingspan is a fantastic video game, as worthy of it should be, being that, you know, it's a counterpart to a fantastic board game. If you already have the board game, I would pretty much say this is still something you might want to play in the event that you are a big fan of, you know, being able to play by yourself and not really deal with the all time on the table. It does have multiplayer, both online and physically, you know, up close and personal, though. But I feel like at that point, if you already have the game physically, you're not worried about that part. But the online part, you would be. So that's another reason to own it, too. If you're like, I want to play the game, but I don't have anybody on hand right now to play with me. Get online. You can beat everybody from around the world. It doesn't fucking matter.
So there you go. Pick it up for $20 and you could beat Purnell.
Well, let's not go nuts. You can try to beat Purnell. You're not going to, but you can try.
Sure.
Now, only thing I hope for, if they listen to this review, when they check out the content coverage or whatever, I'm asking this question to them directly. Is there plans to put the Oceania expansion on this? Because I know the European Bird Show on the store is coming soon, but I didn't see any indication of Oceania being in the works. And that one makes some pretty cool changes to the game that I think
people that buy this game will want to ultimately access down the line. So,
yeah, I'm not too sure. I know that they have the seasonal DLC available on the Xbox Marketplace, the seasonal decorative pack.
I think the seasonal is like, it's all like visual type stuff, like backgrounds for the for the game and stuff. But European Birds adds new birds, which in turn are new abilities. It has I can't remember off the top of my head what they do, but it has the teal abilities, which I think actually are more like player powers that invoke, you know, interacting with when other players do things. So that's pretty cool.
Well, the seasonal pack just came out in February, so it looks like they are still working on the game on console. So maybe we'll see some of the expansion stuff come in the future. But at $20, what's your verdict on the game?
This is a no-brainer buy. Get this bad boy now.
Cool. All right, works for me. Next game to talk about is Androdunos 2, developed by Pickerinsoft. Developed by Pickerinsoft, published by Just for Games and Pixel Heart, released March 24th on the Switch for $19.99. In Androdunos 2, players take control of the Yellow Cherry once more, sent to end the long war with the aliens once and for all. The ship has four distinct weapons that can be improved by collecting bonuses as you progress through the different levels. Did you see that? They said distinct instead of unique. I love it.
I can't believe it.
I know. I'm so excited.
Chris, there another word that means unusual?
Imagine that. Chris, tell us about Androdunos 2.
Okay, Androdunos 2. Well, I was really excited about this one because I've been following the release of this game on the 3DS. Not sure if this is verified, but apparently the physical version of this is like the last title to like go through the rounds of like getting, you know, officially a 3DS release. Huh. So this is like the final 3DS game in a sense.
And we're not talking about the 3DS version. So
no, but
how is it on the Switch?
It matters. That's a because
cool factoid. I didn't know that.
Huh?
But that's a cool factoid though, because I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I didn't know there were still 3DS things coming.
I was gonna say, I don't know. I saw it on Twitter, so whatever. It might be false. Who cares? I'm just spreading lies here. This is a post-fact society. But the fact is that this game is on Switch, and the thing is, though, that you will see while you're playing this. This is, by the way, a horizontal shmup. So, you know, you might know those from like Beaker Reloaded. I can't come up with any other titles. No, just kidding. Like, you know, your Gradius, Darius, whatever. but yeah, you will see like elements of 3DS-ness to it because it was developed for that system. You'll see like enemies appear in the foreground and then they kind of swoop into the actual playing ground. Same with the background. This game is very much built to look really cool in stereoscopic 3D. However, since the Switch does not have that feature, it just is a really good looking game. So yeah, this one, and funny enough, it actually also has sidebars because it is widescreen, but it's not quite wide enough. So they just put a picture of outerspace.jpg to, you know, fill out the sides, which is pretty nice. However, yeah, this game basically, it harkens back to like, you know, old school Taito shooters, even though the original Androdunos or whatever, Dunos Evil. Anyway, the original Androdunos came out in 1992 and was published by SNK for the Neo Geo systems. So this
I'm looking. If you want to get the game on Neo Geo, it's like $1,500.
That's pretty typical for Neo Geo. That doesn't even shock me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is a long-awaited sequel to a game that nobody knew about back then and can't afford now. So there you go. But yeah, this is actually apparently an improvement in pretty much every way. So it's really just kind of what do you call it? Like superficially a sequel. So this is like basically an original game. It is a if you've played the Darius series or like maybe a Gradius 5 or Metal Black or something like that, then you'll recognize some elements of this game. It has the, you know, it's two buttons for controlling as far as like shooting goes. It doesn't have bombs or anything. One button shoots the guns that are on your ship. Believe it or not, there are guns on this ship. And the other one basically is a charge button. So it, if you push it, it then activates a supercharged version of your weapon. Like, you know, your spread gun spreads all the way across the screen. Your, you know, your straightforward shot shoots like huge bullets straight forward, things like that. But then it wears off and then it has a cooldown period, or, you know, a kind of building back up period. But it is infinite use. It's not like bombs. So it's actually kind of a cool thing to be able to time, based on like the size of the enemies and how much bullet power it's going to take them down. Because strategy really is all about this game, because the bonus system for this game, basically the way you get extra lives, because you do have limited continues, you can select up to 8 credits, or is it 9 credits? It's 9 credits, actually. You can select up to 9 credits, and then you have 3 lives per credit, but that's it. There's no infinite credits here. The way you earn extra lives is to collect orbs that you get from doing different things in the level. Sometimes they're just hidden. Sometimes you take down an enemy, like one wave of enemies. Sometimes just a specific enemy. But there actually is a specific number of orbs that are in each level. It's 30. And if you can collect all 30, you get 3 bonus lives at the end of the stage. And it's one hit that kills you, so you're going to need those lives. But, you know, basically, I think it's for every 10 that you collect, you do get an extra life. So it's not that you have to collect all of them. It's just that that's the best way to go. And it gives you something to shoot for, because those orbs are always in consistent places in the levels, which is really cool. So the main feature of this shmup is that the R and L button will actually scroll between 4 different types of weapons. And again, these are all tried and true, shmup, not cliches, but just like the nuts and bolts of like any good side scroller. And that is to say, you've got your straightforward shot that's really fast, you've got your spread shot that goes far and wide, you've got your one shot that goes forward and backwards in a straight line, not quite as powerful, but it will take out things that are behind you, and things will be behind you. And then you have your really powerful straightforward shot that's at a much slower kind of pace, you know, a blam, blam, blam kind of thing instead of brrr, you know. And each one of these weapons can actually be upgraded through drops from enemies. However, if you get a game over, then they reset. Or no, they actually weaken by one level. So it's kind of a balancing act of like trying to get those power-ups and keeping them. But when you pick up a power-up, whichever weapon you have equipped, that's the weapon that gets powered up. So it's all about like not only picking your favorite, but also maybe being like, well, I want to, I'm going to use my spread shot as a main, but I want to do the backward shot later. So I'm going to try and power up the backward shot as I go, all the while trying to collect orbs and stuff. So lots to think about in this game that only uses 2 buttons, which is pretty nice. The levels are super good. The levels are really well designed, very pretty to look at. The enemies are really cool. Like I said, they kind of fall on the Gradius side of things in the sense that, like, it's, you know, bosses with, like, a shoot-the-core kind of, you know, aspect to them. And, you know, some bosses that kind of take over, like, the whole room, which is kind of cool. But it actually mostly reminded me of my favorite series, which is Darius, because of the whole, like, you're shooting and dropping missiles at the same time, or sometimes the missiles are, like, the diagonal shots that come out, which is really cool. In fact, at one point, I was like, damn, like, all I need is for these ships to be fish, and I'm going to be, like, set. And then, no joke, the game then went underwater, and I had to shoot fish. So I was like, hell yeah, I am home. So yeah, this was a really impressive like effort, and actually, well, I'll save this for the whatever thing.
The verdict.
But the verdict. Thank you. The whatever thing. But yeah, this is a really cool like nice balanced difficulty game. You know, it scales up pretty comfortably, but it does get hard. It's challenging, but it it's super simple and yet makes you think. So I'm just like, damn, these guys really, you know, showed everyone else how to do it.
Ooh, well, $20. What are your thoughts? Give us that verdict.
Absolutely a buy it. And in fact, after playing this game on the Switch, I went and actually ordered myself a copy of the game on 3DS too. So I bought it.
Nice. And if you want to pick up the physical edition of the game, go to vgnysoft.com. They have it available for the Switch and the 3DS for pre-order. It is $39.99 each platform. Give it a go.
Yeah, for sure. Great game. Fantastic.
Cool. All right. Next up is Dismantle, developed and published by 10 Tons, released March 31st on the Switch for $19.99. As you ascend from your shelter after the long, long years, a brave new world awaits you, a world inhabited with nasty and vile creatures, a world no other human soul to be seen, a world with nature and rains now, a world that's about to get even worse. You need to find a way to escape the wretched island, but before
you
that...
You need.
Oh my god, dude, awesome.
You need.
But before that, enjoy the bittersweet apocalypse. Brooke, tell us about Dismantle.
Oof, I don't want to give spoilers for my review here, but Dismantle is a wonderful game. It was actually an honor to play this game. I need this Dismantle, and I'm so lucky I got it. I'm so impressed by this game. Like, I started writing my review, and I wrote, this is a gamer's game. And then I was like, what are you even talking about? What does that mean? And I don't know exactly what I meant, but, like, it's addictive, it's engrossing, and it feels like a game. And it's the type of game that, like, I wouldn't think I'd like, but I look up after 2 hours, and I'm like, oh, my God, where did the time go? Like, it's just it's just what you want. It's a wonderful game, and not just because they gave me a crowbar and told me I could not only destroy literally everything in the game, but I'm encouraged to. It's cool. You can't destroy everything from the beginning. You do have to earn it. You can upgrade that crowbar. You can make and get other tools, all kinds of options here. But before I go too deep down that rabbit hole with all the different stuff you can do in this game, you start out by a shelter, which is actually just a house in the suburbs, I think, out by the woods. This has just been really overgrown with vines and whatnot. You got a campfire outside, lots of garbage and woods and old tools and appliances that you can start trying to break apart, depending on how quickly you can upgrade that crowbar. And you're destroying stuff a lot like the game I reviewed last week. You're destroying things to collect the basic materials that make them up so you can craft new items. It's post-apocalyptic zombie goodness, but while that genre is a little bit tired at this point, we've seen a shitload of games like this. This game is really anything but tired and cliche. It's got a whole ton going on. Really, the post-apocalyptic atmosphere is kind of like just an engine, like an excuse, a vessel to let you wreck shit with a crowbar, salvage, kill mindless humanoids who are definitely trying to eat you, but you still got to kill them, so it's not like your fault that you got to kill them. I don't know if you guys ever struggle with that in games, but sometimes I'm like, man, I don't even want to kill this guy, but these guys, it's easy. They don't have any brains. They're trying to eat my brains. It's easy. It's a no-brainer, if you will.
Did you go there? You went there.
That's not in my notes.
Go there.
I shouldn't have gone there.
She's gone on script.
She did it. You know, all the good stuff you want from a post-apocalyptic hellscape, and you want to talk about crafting, like, this game has so much crafting, so much more crafting than a lot of other crafting, like, quote unquote, like survival games I've played. And even though there's a shitload of options, tons of stuff to craft and tons of types of crafting you can do, it's got this huge, like, crafting and upgrading your tools tree. But even though there are so many options, sometimes, especially at the beginning of a game, if you give me too many options, or you show me the map too early, or you show me the entirety of the crafting tree or whatever mechanism you're using to map that out for my progress too early, my eyes will just kind of glaze over and I'll be like, that looks hard, or that looks complicated, or like, oh man, I can't understand all of this information yet. And at best, sometimes it just comes off as like, well, you got a lot to learn. You got a lot of time that you can put into this game so you can understand it better. But everything in this game, the way it's laid out, is just so intuitive. It's a survival game, but it's not like creepy or horror heavy at all. My partner really hates straight up horror games. He hates jump scary games. So I always kind of want to play stuff like this with him, but a lot of the time it'll have like an atmospheric spookiness or off-puttingness. This game doesn't really have that going on, and it's not trying to. If anything, the graphics are cute, but it's still super, super immersive and engrossing. It's not a crazy similar game to Don't Starve in like style or spirit, but think that sort of thing. You know, you got a kind of a cartoony vibe going on, but you can still get scared because there are going to be violent encounters, things happening quickly, and it's not turn-based either. You have to think quickly on your feet and move quickly in return to survive. As far as just how the game is made itself, like the way it's laid out from the beginning, it's made with so much love, so many considerate choices made on behalf of the gamer playing it. This game opens up and it's, you know, it's time to select your settings. Do you want to use the metric system in this game, or do you want to use whatever it is we call our dumbass system that we use over here? You get to pick either one of those. Do you want your temperature to be Celsius or Fahrenheit? Do you want AM, PM time on the clock? Do you want a 24-hour military type of time for the clock? Or do you want the third option that I can't even remember right now because I'd never heard of that?
I didn't know there was another option for time.
I'm going to like start You can do multiple saves on this. I'm actually going to restart it after this review, and then I'll kind of like interject in between reviews and be like, oh, here's the third time. Because I hadn't, I'm drawing a blank over here on what they were calling it. But yeah, when a game opens up like this, you know, I don't need all that stuff. Like, I'm not over here in other game reviews being like, they didn't let me pick between AM, PM, or Celsius and Fahrenheit. Like, it's not a negative if I'm not given those choices at the beginning of the game. When a game does give me even one choice like that before the tutorial starts, it does set me up to go, huh, this is going to be a really considerate experience, like, made for me. And the person making this is putting themselves in the shoes of the player. And, you know, that type of experience doesn't let up post settings. This is one of the most fun, organic, easy, yet challenging enough to keep you super interested tutorials that I've ever played. It feels really seamless with dumping you into the game post tutorial. I'm not like waiting for the tutorial to be over. I'm not wondering if I should be making sure that I really learn everything before we move on. And then am I going to forget it later? It's really an effortless experience getting into this game. I actually kind of want to compare it to the other game I played for this show this week, In Nightmare, the one that Purnell reviewed. I gave that game a really good rating. I think it's a really great work of art game, but it doesn't have the type of tutorial I'm talking about here. I got really stuck in that tutorial, and I kept having the feeling of like, oh gosh, are you guys going to teach me one more mechanic that we never like use more than once in the incredibly long tutorial? And then later, am I going to be ready to play this game? Like, I'm not even worried about that playing this tutorial. I'm waiting for it to be over. It's just really cool. Other things to love about this game. I know I'm going on and on here. I'm going to try to wrap it up. It's an open world. It's super exploratory. The map is huge. And I think I may not have even seen all of it at this point. I put some real time into this game. There is some quick combat going on. You can pause it. But like I said earlier, it's not turn-based. But even though this game has nothing in common with Elden Ring, it reminds me a little bit of like Elden Ring. Bring it home. And then when there's
common with it. That's how we bring reviews home now. We get back to Elden Ring.
I kind of want to give myself a personal challenge to compare every game to Elden Ring, but that's a slippery slope. But you know what? I was playing this game a little more this weekend, and I was like, you know, this reminds me of Elden Ring because I've been asking myself, why do I like the fighty encounters? Why do I like the violent encounters in Elden Ring when they are really challenging? And it's because it's meaningful. Like, that's kind of how the conflict in this game feels too, when you're doing like your violent melee goodness. Like, it doesn't feel like grindy for the sake of being grindy or challenging for the sake of being challenging. Does that make sense? Like, but it doesn't feel too hard, but it doesn't feel too soft either. And plenty of people are thinking Elden Ring is too hard at some points. And I don't disagree with that for some people, but I think this game, yeah, it's just a really, really chill, organic experience that's also like exciting and scary. I can't say enough good things about this game.
Oh, well, it's sitting at $20. What are your thoughts?
I mean, this is instantly a buy it for me, even when I just loaded up, got through the tutorial. And the more I played of it, the more that I really like, this is exactly the kind of game I want to support for $20. Like, this game is it exceeds expectations in every way. Like, I think everyone might enjoy this. I think anybody should give it a shot. I kind of said this earlier, but it's everything you can want in a game. It's addicting, it's engrossing, it's challenging, but it's not too challenging for anyone to call it inaccessible. I do think anyone could learn this game, and I think anyone could enjoy it and finish it if they wanted to. I heard there's local co-op play in this game too. I didn't even know about that until earlier. I haven't tried that yet, but I really want to, like, later tonight try it out. Every tool you make or collect, you can upgrade over and over. The map is huge, but it's also varied. I don't want to do spoilers here, but there's forests, there's cities, there's deserts, there's all kind of stuff to discover here. And crafting isn't just about, oh, can I upgrade my crowbar now? Can I make myself a band-aid because I'm hurt? You've got cooking, you've got fishing, you've got farming. And this game also does a great job of not only making all those things like fun and immersive, but also like not teaching you everything at the very beginning. You unlock cooking later once you craft your own cookware. You know, if I don't want to go on and on about it too much, but like, you know, if you have no life and you're really, really, really bored and you want to do something that's going to take way too much time and have no point, go back and listen to every review I've ever given for a game and count the times that like I have used words like addictive or engrossing, or like how many times I call a game just like actually fun, like a fun game. I always try to be respectful of devs and publishers because I really respect the art of game making, but like, I can't say the majority of games that I play that I feel are this well-balanced and engrossing and just a really fun time. Yeah, and I can't recommend it enough. Really had a wonderful time with this game, and I'm going to keep playing it, even though I really want to play Elden Ring when I'm not doing review games. I'm going to keep this one up. Super impressed by this one.
So next week we'll be dismantling Elden Ring.
Ooh, yeah. Challenges.
It's, you said this is 10 tons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually made one of my favorite Switch games, too. That's like an unexpected one.
What is it?
King Oddball.
I'm actually writing that down. I'm so impressed by this studio right now.
Yeah, 10 tons does a lot of really good stuff.
I 100%ed King Oddball 4 times now.
Oh, it's my actually God. Like,
it's like my 4th or 5th most played games, and that's like including like Skyrim and Animal Crossing.
Oh, wow, dude.
This is a long game?
No, it's just a puzzle game. It's just flinging boulders at blocks, and yet it's so well done that it's just like it was like my thing. When I couldn't think of what to play, I would play King Oddball until I could think of what else I wanted to play.
That's awesome.
Have you tried their game Baseball Riot?
Yeah, I reviewed it. It's good.
You tell me that like I should remember.
No, it was years ago. I don't expect you to remember 5 years ago, but it was good.
I don't remember 5 days ago.
it was good, but not as good.
Yeah, I think all their games are really solid, though. I think 10 Tons is just a really solid studio in general.
I mean, they have so much weight on their shoulders. I mean, they kind of have to
I would play anything. Like, if you get any more games from this studio, like, please toss them to me. I'll fight Purnell and Tim and Chris for
all whatever right, I got to do. Death. I've been waiting for the challenge.
Yeah, King Oddball, I don't need
sweet death matches. That's good. All right, next game to talk about is Glam's Incredible Run Escape from Dooka, developed and published by Red Art Games, released March 30th on Xbox One and PS4 for $4.99. Glam has the most unique ability in the video game in video game history. She could grab branches and swing by using her hair. Controls are simple, 3 buttons and a stick. Master your swinging and jumping skills on the epic obstacles courses where each death is a lesson. Purnell, what's going on in Glam's Incredible Run?
What's going on? I can't believe the SE says she has the most unique ability in video games.
That read like a joke to me.
It's like, no, she doesn't. If anything, Shantae could probably do half that shit. Shantae!
That's the joke, Purnell.
I had to say it anyway. I'm not Rainier Wolfcastle all the time.
That's the joke.
I'm just Purnell. That's the joke.
What is going on tonight?
Right here,
I don't know. We're over 2 hours. I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore.
As for the actual game, this is honestly going to be a really short review because this is one of those games where it's not a lot to talk about, but it doesn't need to be. It's a massacre platformer. You are a woman who has long, fabulous hair, and she uses that fabulous hair to assist her in platforming hijinks. Your goal is to go from level to level, each level being composed of one screen, with the object being to get from one side of it to the other, where a door exists that will allow you to progress to the next single screen. Your abilities are, you can jump, you can use your wild and crazy locks to grab onto objects in a form of manner to swing from one end to the other, to swing around like a grappling hook sort of deal. So you'll be running. You can grab walls and jump off of walls. But if you have a climbable surface and you grab onto the wall, you have a sort of an energy meter represented by the color of your hair, where that determines how long you're allowed to make use of the action before you just kind of let go and fall. You're basically navigating these stages, trying to get to the end. But there's also a collectible item on some of the levels in the form of a cassette tape. This cassette tape can be collected to say you have a bunch of cassettes. If it unlocks something at the end of the game, I can't tell you what it is because this game's friggin' hard. Because, again, it is a massacre platformer. But that's okay because I still like these kinds of games. It just means I'm not good enough to beat it in the time of this review. It's interesting, though, because musically, it's a fantastic product. One thing I like about when I think about massacre games, one thing that's very important to them is the music has to be good because you're going to hear it a lot when you constantly get your ass handed to you. The music in this game is pretty good. It's kind of just a looping series of tracks. Like, there's no, like, at least from what I could tell, there's not music based on the stage you're on. It's just, hey, here's a good track to listen to. This track is overtime for another track to listen to. But they're good tracks, so I'm okay with that. But just, it's good to listen to it as you're running around. Now, let's talk about the actual gameplay itself, because I just kind of rambled into the music because I thought about how many times I died while playing it. It's interesting because fluid, like movement-wise, I felt the movement was very fluid. Glam, I guess that's her name, is fairly easy to control. The issue that I did come across, and this may just have been a Purnell issue, not the game's issue, is when you grab onto an object, you start swinging left to right. And as long as you're holding onto the swing button, you'll continue to swing. Once you let go, you'll just let go of the object. But if you press the jump button, you will swing from the object and move toward, you know, forward in the stage. And that is a very important component to a lot of the platforming because you might need that swing momentum to propel yourself forward to land on a platform. And more times than I could count, I would attempt to make this action happen, and I would not get enough momentum to fly forward and land on the platform. And I wasn't sure if it was the game itself and I was just using it incorrectly, or if I was mistiming the button press, and therefore it means I need to improve my timing. But it was driving me crazy, and a large number of the deaths I had on the stages I could attribute to just being like, I can't get this damn timing right. I'm just missing this jump and falling to my death. Thankfully, of course, restarts are fairly quick and easy. I mean, I didn't lose a lot of time. The downside, of course, this is one of those games where they like to tell you how many times you died. And I don't need to see that. I don't need that disappointment in my life. But they still tell you. It's there all the time, staring in the face. But outside of that element of things, I did enjoy my gameplay experience with this title. I liked the new gimmicks that they introduced into each level to kind of keep the platforming fresh and light and breezy. But again, you're going to fail a lot, and that's okay, because that's the style of game this is. But if you're okay with playing games that don't pull punches from the very, very, very beginning, and wants you to work for what you're going to get, which is the U1 screen, essentially, I can't imagine this game having a major crazy ending or anything. I think this game is worth your time and money.
That'd be nuts if a game like this had like a 45-minute long ending cutscene that nobody has ever seen because it's so hard.
It's very possible. Like, I mean, because like I said, this is one of those ones where, like, you know, a lot of times these games are like, here's the grassland stage, and the grassland is really easy, and they just kind of ramp it up. This game's like, nah. They, at best, they might say, hey, this level is not too hard because we're showing you what the gimmick for this world is. But then after that, you know, shit, work for it. And if the level itself isn't too hard, getting the mixtape might be the thing that makes it too hard. So it's doable, but good luck. You're going to work for it. But it's a fun game. I enjoy playing it, and I'm happy with it.
Well, it's $5. What's your verdict?
I think it's a buy.
Cool. Works for me.
It's truly outrageous.
Yeah, it looks cute. I picked it up. I haven't played it yet, but it looks adorable. I feel like my $5 probably hasn't been wasted. It looks like, based on visuals alone, it's just a really cute visual style. I like it.
It's the Elden Ring style of, even if, yes, you don't beat the,
this is the Elden Ring.
Doubt it! If you get to the point where you outright just can't beat the game, but you enjoy the effort you put into trying to complete the game, then that in and of itself, in my opinion, is still worth the money. Every game doesn't need to be beaten, just, you know, pushed as far as you can personally go.
All right, next game is Red Wings American Aces, developed by Iron Bird Creations, published by All In Games, released March 31st on the Switch for $11.99. Red Wings American Aces puts you in the pilot seat of a nostalgic action-packed arcade shooter illustrated in fun comic book style with a gaming mode for every occasion, local or online, solo or multiplayer. Prove yourself in exciting aerial battles and make a name for your squad as the best aces of World War I. Chris, tell us about your time with Red Wings American Aces.
Okay, so Red Wings American Aces, not to be confused with the other two Red Wings games that were published by All In. and in fact, I did kind of confuse them at first because I don't know what the difference is between this and Red Wings Aces in the Sky, besides, you know, maybe it's a sequel? I don't know. There's also one that they did called Red Wings Coloring Planes, which is just about painting these planes. I just thought that was really funny, and I might even consider buying it just to see what it's all about. So yeah, this is a one in a long series of Red Wings games that is basically an arcade-style dogfight plane shooter. So it's set in World War I, because they all are, and you know, it's very much like kind of set in the Allied forces versus the Red Baron, who is actually name dropped in this game, and they actually name drop Germans too, which is actually not super common for this kind of game. Sometimes they euphemize a little bit. They're like, you know, the Axis or something. They're like, no, we're going to go kick some German ass in this game. So it has a story mode where, surprise, surprise, you are a pilot and you sign up to shoot down Germans, and that's what you do. That's the story. It is split up into 30 missions. Each one has you flying in with your plane, and you go and, you know, like if you've played something like Star Fox, whenever you're fighting, like Star Fox 64, when you're fighting against Star Wolf, for instance, that's the kind of game this is. Like you are going around, you're kind of free to roam a, you know, the battlefield, which is just the open sky. And, you know, as the enemies get in your sight, you try to shoot them down and then, you know, take evasive maneuvers and, of course, do a barrel roll. That is a very important move in this game because it gives you that temporary invincibility that you need for when, you know, somebody's shooting at you. Just like in real life, I guess. Anyways. But yeah, so like it's arcade style, which means that it does not base itself in any kind of realism. You are supposed to shoot down the other planes. The other thing is that each face button is kind of a different move that you can do. So like B will turn you around really quickly. A is the aforementioned barrel roll. You also have a finishing move that you can do, which is like cinematic and kind of cool, with the X button. And then the Y button is, so the Y button is weird. It's like, it lets you target multiple planes and then you can send a backup, quote unquote, to shoot them down. So it's kind of like it should be a lock on, like in the Star Fox games and the ilk, but I could not get it to work very well. I could only ever target one plane, and like by the time I even got my other plane to get over there, the guy had already shot me down. So, or I crashed into him because I'm like, you know, sitting there aiming at dead center and trying to get something to happen. But the cool thing is that all of these aspects can actually be improved upon with a skill tree. So this actually contains leveling up. However, instead of experience points or anything like that, the way you level up your plane is to collect medals by getting a by reaching a certain like score threshold or achieving a certain like goal in each mission. Whereupon you can use the skill tree to improve all of those aspects. However, I'm not that good at this game, so I did not get to explore that skill tree very much. So, but yeah, it's actually really fun. The graphics are this kind of cel-shaded thing, you know, like the clouds are these opaque like blobs in the sky kind of thing. Everything looks like it was kind of drawn up like kind of comic book style. The actual storyline bits are actually like done up like comic book style, although not super stylized. It's not like that weird dot matrixy kind of look like actual, you know, 1940s and 30s comics, but that's okay. I'm not expecting like a huge amount of stuff for $11. The other cool thing about it is that story mode is actually up to two players, local, I believe. There's also local game, which you can do up to two players. I saw another review that said five players, but I wasn't able to find that option, and I don't have five players to test that with. Then it does have an online mode, so you can actually do dogfights in online, but of course, I wasn't able to set up a match. I did try, though. I did my due diligence there for once.
I believe from what I'm reading, it looks like the online is 5v5.
Gotcha, possibly. Okay. That must be what I was looking at, yeah. Yeah, and past that, you know, it's got some online modes that I'm excited to try once, like, there's more people playing this game. Pretty much at the end, you know, as far as that goes, it's just different things. Like, they give you tutorials for everything, which is really nice. It also has things like, you know, of course, you take damage and your fuel runs out as you're fighting, but it actually does have the ring system, again, from Star Fox, where if you fly through a ring, then it'll restore all your stuff. So it's pretty cool like that. You know, not just, you know, take five shots and die. It's like you actually do get to kind of, I'll shoot three of these guys down, then I'll run for one of those rings, stuff like that. So I like the way it controls. It is difficult, but it doesn't feel unfair. And like I said, there's skill trees. You can actually level up your plane. And I believe you can even decorate it a little bit, which is kind of nice. Or you can just buy a whole nother game and paint a warplane.
Yes, color everything.
Yeah.
Well, this one's $12. What do you say?
This one was pretty well put together. I'd say $12 is a buy it. Especially if you like dogfighting shooters, you know, arcade style, not too realistic. But, you know, this one didn't have anything in it really that annoyed me or anything. So I, you know, quite like it. And at $12, that's a pretty good deal. So, yeah, going to give it a buy it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Elden Ring. No, I'm kidding. One final game to talk about called Astro Ace, developed and published by Irondale's Entertainment, released September 15th on Steam for $2.99. Astro Ace is a retro-styled addictive arcade space shooter from the distant universe. An evil alien fleet is invading the solar system. You will have to ride a powerful spaceship and fight against endless waves of enemies. Purnell, tell us about your time with Astro Ace.
You just described it.
All right, $3. What do you say?
Total buy.
good night, everyone.
All jokes aside, though, he did kind of just describe the game. Essentially, you start the game off. Initially, they just kind of say, here you go, get in the game. And you're tasked with just destroying as many enemies as you possibly can. And not dying. This is done in the form of you boost having the maze to use a button to accelerate, a button to kind of brake slash decelerate. And unlike, this is one of those style of games also where movement is based off of propelling and then using left and right to steer your ship. You don't just choose to go up, down, left, or right. You steer your ship in the direction it's going. And then there's a button to fire a gun. And unless there's a button I just didn't realize existed this whole time I was playing the game, that's pretty much it. It's a fun time, though. As you're playing it, enemies are scrolling off the screen from the left or the right side. And when they show up, you will want to attempt to hopefully kill them because sometimes they'll just pass through. Other times they'll actually attempt to kill you as well. But regardless of how they actually behave, they're all worth sweet, delicious points. And you want those points because the whole point of the game is to get a high score. Sometimes power-ups will also fly in that when you destroy them and collect them, you might get, like, you know, increased shot power. You might get a different type of gun, like a gun that fires bullets behind you, a spread shot, stuff like that. Now, after you take a number of hits that are equivalent to, or greater than rather, the amount of shield energy your ship has, you will inevitably die. When that happens, the points you've acquired not only go to a sort of high score, but they also will accumulate into the form of a shared experience pool. Every few levels, you will unlock something new. You can unlock new ships, which, and then, by the way, now at this point, you'll be able to select the ship. It's not just the ship they give you at the beginning of the game. You can choose between different ships that each have different stats. You can choose different weapons to start your game out with. Eventually, you gain access to other weapon slots. You can have more than one weapon to choose from. But you'll essentially be just playing the game with the intent being to defeat as many enemies as possible, get a high score, dying, unlocking new stuff, configuring your ship to have a new run, wash, rinse, repeat to see how far you can get and get the highest score possible. And there's nothing wrong with that. I found it to be pretty fun and somehow lightly addictive too. You know, that one more game run, I can do a little better this time. That does exist in this game. I had a lot of fun playing it. So with a $3 price tag, you can get a couple runs in, unlock all the stuff that's possible, unlock and go. I got my fun out of it. So I almost want to call it a fuck it, why not? Because I like saying that and I haven't done that in a while, but this is also a game that I would just say it's okay to buy in its own right. It's a lot of fun and it's a good time.
Well, you answered my question, so I don't know where to go from here.
Well, you can ask me what my favorite food is.
All right, $2.99. What's your favorite food?
Fried catfish and also butt.
Wow.
Yeah, works for me. All right, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. How did I sound this episode? Did I sound okay?
To me. Yeah, you sounded normal.
Well, as it depends, before we say that, we got to know, was there something you were expecting us to say? Are you checking for something like this?
I don't know. My front tooth broke in half. So I have a massive gap in my front teeth. So I didn't know how my fifth would sound.
So what you're saying is that all you want for Christmas is your two front teeth?
Well, no, I have two of them. I just want the other half of the one back.
No, it was just me telling another bad joke based off an old song from my childhood.
Yes, I know the song, Purnell.
I don't know if you do, Joe. I don't know that you do. I don't
really know the song.
I think we need Purnell to sing it. Make sure he knows.
Yeah, Purnell, how does it go?
Nope, I
Two front teeth. That's the song of the two front teeth. Two front teeth song. It's the two front teeth song with the front teeth song.
In my mouth. What happened to my fucking teeth? Put them back in so I can eat. Teeth. Feed me, baby. Feed me teeth. All right. There you go.
Wow.
I love the teeth feed me baby bridge. I'm dying. I'm so happy.
Oh, man. But no, I didn't hear anything that indicated you were missing any tooth enamel.
Yeah.
You sounded perfectly sibilant.
Super. Sounds good to me. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I mean, I just threw out sibilant. That's good enough.
Yeah, that works.
It really is. I haven't heard that word actually ever, so I think that's a very good word. All right,
Chris, one more time. Give it to us.
Sibilant.
Thank you.